Good afternoon, everybody. Matt Bubala in for Ro Khan this afternoon. Judy's in news, Violetta's in traffic, Kevin's up in sports, Camille Suknovich is producing today. Heidi Stevens, our friend from the Chicago Tribune, is in studio with us this hour.
Hi, Matt.
How are you, Heidi?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm perplexed because you and I both have relatively young children. I have a 16-year-old and triplets who are 12. You have a daughter who is 11?
11.
And a son who is 9?
8.
8. Mm-hmm. And your 11-year-old daughter is now, right now as we speak, somewhere by herself out on Michigan Avenue shopping.
I cannot
by herself
believe
without
believe you are telling
a
people about
guardian. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that between us?
That was a secret.
Oh my God.
No, it wasn't a secret.
I just I don't know whether I'm impressed or like, Heidi, how could you? I mean, you'll get those emails, but
she's shopping the Mag Mile. Come on.
At the age of 11. It's on like her own. Without anybody with her.
This is a mall. That like it's Spring Hill Mall for kids who live in the city.
With cars and buses.
Well, but no dark corners.
True.
Like a mall.
Yeah.
No?
Okay.
You're not buying it.
Well, I don't let the kids go to the mall either. I mean, I don't. It's so funny because I don't consider myself a real bad helicopter parent.
Uh-huh.
Although I feel like, you know, when you and I were kids, we ran around and did whatever. I used to come home when the street lights were on, all that stuff that I would never, ever allow. And, but, you know, we pretty much always know where the kids are. And I would be so scared right now if, like, our triplets, even the three of them together, were walking around on Michigan Avenue. I told you off the air, even our 16-year-old hasn't been downtown just walking around by himself.
Yeah.
With a friend he has, but not by himself.
She does it with friends. And, like, today I was coming here to hang with you. And, you know, she was like, let me shop while you do radio. And I have a phone right here. She's got a phone.
Sure.
I think we're good.
Here's what I think the big difference is. You live and are raising your kids in the city.
Yeah.
And I'm way, way, way out in the burbs, where you grew up in West Dundee.
Right.
And I think there's just sort of a different mentality that you guys are always in the city, you're always around the city, you're always around a lot of traffic and buses and cars and people.
Her friends.
And I think you're a little more, you know, just you feel good about it because you live in it.
Yeah, this is our hometown. So she, a lot of her friends ride CTA to school. Like she, you know, they're used to buses and trains and, she, you know, we take the L a lot. She, you know, she's got it.
It's funny. My older son's baseball team, when they were young, when they were like 10 years old, 11 years old, and we would have to come play at Horner Park sometimes. That was within our district.
Yeah. Love Horner.
And we were coming to play those kids for a championship, sectional championship game. And we show up and our parents are walking our kids to the bathroom and we're tying their shoes.
Uh-huh.
And we're feeding them a sandwich with the crust cut off.
Right.
And these kids are riding a bike through the forest or getting off a bus.
Right.
And just showing up to play baseball. And our coach said, oh, my God, they're going to kill us because these kids aren't going to stress out if they make an error because the mom and dad aren't carrying them around, you know, and like carrying them across the puddles like we are.
They eat their crusts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they're tougher. And they beat the hell out of us that game.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. No, it's fine. But it is a difference, I think, between city living and suburban living a little bit, don't you think?
It probably is.
What you become accustomed to and are stronger with and things like that.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Lady Gaga tonight at Wrigley Field. I'll be there. Heidi, you've got your daughter downtown today. Are you taking her to Lady Gaga?
I'm not taking her to Lady Gaga. I took her to Meghan Trainor, which was a lot of fun. That's our only concert so far. But I would totally take her to Lady Gaga if tickets weren't as much as you just told me tickets were.
I was wondering if you're going to be nice to me and not reveal on the air, even though I just said that your daughter's downtown.
I'd rather take her to see Hamilton. For those prices.
I don't know. Lady Gaga, you don't know. Hamilton's always here. You can always go to Hamilton.
That's true. That's
It'll
true.
Be around forever.
No, I'm a big Gaga fan.
Ben Bradley from WGN-TV News, I think, is going to Lady Gaga. Aren't you opening for Gaga tonight, Ben?
I just heard we're actually sending Skycam 9 over the Lady Gaga concert just before it starts. That's the closest I ever get to any type of mass assembly of humanity.
Really?
Especially when it involves screeching teens and preteens, which... Isn't that what a Lady Gaga show is?
Well, that's a
good
question. What do we think, Heidi? So, Ben, Matt Bubala here with you and Heidi Stevens from your Chicago Tribune. We're all sitting together here. Thanks for jumping on the phone with us. Congratulations, by the way, on winning the Game of Thrones to take over Mark Sapelsa's spot here on the Ro Khan Show.
Yes,
congrats.
It was a bloody coup here to do that.
But the crazy thing
it's
is...
better than the Powerball.
You know, you win the Game of Thrones, you end up dying. I don't know why they reveal it like that. I mean, does that mean you're going to have to retire now like Mark in a year or two or something? Somebody's going to push you out,
Ben. Hey, may we all be so fortunate to follow in Sapelsa's
footsteps,
right?
No kidding, huh?
By the way, it's 3:23. He's on the air in like an hour and a half. He hasn't even shown up yet. So he's full retirement mode already.
He's already off the radio show. He's not even checking the scripts anymore. He's just waltzing in.
Yeah.
Is he shaving even for the broadcast anymore?
You know, he is shaving, I think, every other day, which may be all he has to do. His skin, I don't know if you've ever seen him up close. It's buttery smooth, buttery smooth.
Well, you're just going to get all your shots in before he gets out of there, aren't you, Ben?
No, that was a compliment.
Oh, okay. Hey, well, I think that was more of a shot at the care he must put into being so pristine facially.
I think he was born that way.
Oh, very nice, hey, Lady Gaga tie-in. Very good. That's a good question, though, that Ben has, Heidi. What kind of crowd do you think we're expecting at Lady Gaga tonight? Do you think it's a lot? I don't think it's like Taylor Swift teenage type.
I think
it's a little bit older than that.
Yeah, I would guess older and a little edgier.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you how old we are that we've, I don't want to say grown up with Lady Gaga, but, you know, she has come of age in the last few years that she's now considered like a senior performer.
Yeah, she
is.
Sure is.
But she's always been a lot more edgy than a Taylor Swift or a Katy Perry.
Yeah, she has, I would say.
She's different. What are you guys working on in the newsroom, Ben?
Well, we're working on a couple stories right now. Actually, in the next 5 or 6 minutes or so, we're going to find out who won that big Mega Millions drawing. The winner has stepped forward. We believe they are from Palos Heights. This was one of, if not the largest lottery jackpot that's been claimed in Illinois in the Mega Millions drawing, $300 and some odd million. Yeah. It wasn't the Powerball from yesterday.
$300 million. Put it back. Give me the $700.
And it still wouldn't solve the state's budget problems, even if the state won the Mega Millions drawing. But our Gaynor Hall is talking with the owner of that winning ticket. We'll have that for you coming up. Also, we're going to go up north northwest to Gray's Lake. We covered a fire there a couple of days ago in which a teen was injured, badly burned. Now it turns out that teenager was shot before the fire took place. The grandmother may have attempted suicide. We're getting a lot of new information from police up in Gray's Lake. Eric Rung covering that story for us. And Friday night, school going back. It is the first Friday night football game for many high schools. We are celebrating every Friday this fall. WGN News at 4 going on the road. Our meteorologist Demetrius Ivory is going to be live from different football games all over the area. Tonight he goes precisely 2 blocks from the WGN studios to Lane Tech Stadium where DePaul College Prep is playing Steinmetz tonight.
Well, that sounds like a lot of stuff going on. Ben, what do you think with the winner of the Mega Millions winner that came forward today on a Friday? I know they're doing interviews, so they must be okay with some publicity. I wondered, were they waiting, like, let this other one win, and then I'll kind of slide under the radar, I'll reveal myself, but then I can, you know, go back into anonymity?
It may be. You always wonder what the strategy is. You know, Heidi, Matt, what would you guys do if you won? Would you come forward? Would you do a news conference?
I literally could give you both a 30-minute dissertation because I've spent so much time in my life thinking about what I would do if I won money like that.
I would donate it all to CPS.
Oh, you would not, Heidi. Come on.
They would be close to covering their bills.
And would that
for
get you
year.
Back in their good graces?
Am I not
get your daughter
graces?
Back in?
My daughter's there.
Your son, who's in trouble in the Stevens family?
Well, school hasn't started yet. So.
You get him some good grades for the lifetime, I would think. Maybe a gymnasium named after you. I literally, Ben, I would plan everything out with a lawyer before I ever came forward. I would make sure that everything was taken care of. And I would donate tons of money, but I would set up who in the family is getting a... You know, whatever you can set up to give as much away without blowing it on taxes as possible.
But, right.
I would invest a lot of it.
Yeah, every kid you have any affection for goes to college on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the newsroom yesterday, we got a good laugh when the Powerball winner came forward and she said at the news conference, well, I decided to come forward now. Because after today, I just don't want anyone to bother me. Well, okay, good luck with that.
Yeah, you know what's funny is my wife always, when it gets up to something like I don't want to play it till it's over 100 million.
But that's the worst time to play it, according to the odds.
The odds are always terrible. It's always 76 million to 1.
The odds are always terrible, but you're more likely to have to split a jackpot when more people are playing.
This person isn't.
Wow.
Right?
That's like saying because it was cold yesterday, there's no such thing as global warming.
Listen, I wait till it gets up to hundreds of millions.
And here's a hint. Don't ever ask Skilling about global warming unless you've got like a week.
Hey, I want you guys to send him down to watch the hurricane because I want to see how he reacts to that.
Oh, he's still recovering from the eclipse. Yeah. We haven't seen him in here since the big solar eclipse.
He's taking time off to recoup.
I think that fully expensed all of his excitement for the week, possibly the month. He hasn't been on the air since the eclipse.
People loved that, though. That was such a beautiful moment. One of the best
moment,
parts about
it?
The eclipse was totally. Tom Skilling reacting to the eclipse.
Right. I saw a bunch of people on Twitter writing, the next best thing to watch to seeing the solar eclipse was seeing Tom Skilling see
yeah.
the solar eclipse.
Yeah, it truly was.
It was like the greatest YouTube reaction video.
Yeah. I mean, to have somebody care that much about the Earth and somebody yeah. with his knowledge. And yeah,
and to see
great.
Somebody just get, you know, it's such a thing that's not planned. It's so right. anti-Kardashian, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just the wonders of the world that we live in.
Completely
it makes us realize and step away from everything else we fight
and
about
I'm
all the time.
I'm probably not going to shock you too when I say this, but some people in our line of work may not be the most authentic in the world.
He's taking a shot at Sapelsa again.
No, he's actually great. But what you saw out of Skilling, why I think people responded so well to it, is because that is exactly who he is.
Yeah.
That's who he is when you bump into him at the dry cleaners or when you see him on TV.
No, he is one of the most genuine people ever and always so happy to talk to you.
Does he get his Snuggie dry cleaned?
No, I think he gets a brand new one every time.
They have an unlimited supply. Ben, what time do we need to tune into you guys this afternoon?
We'll see you in a half hour for the WGN News at 4, and then Mr. Sapelsa, assuming he comes in on a Friday, will take things over at 5 o'clock with Micah.
Sounds good. You have a good weekend. We'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks for having me with you.
You bet. Ben Bradley from your WGN-TV News. Our news is next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you, filling in for Roe and Anna this afternoon on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out with us on your drive home. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio here in the historic Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile. Judy's up in news. Violetta's got traffic. Kevin's got sports. Camille's behind the glass. And our friend Heidi Stevens from your Chicago Tribune sitting in with us this hour. Do you have a game? Heidi is a football coach now, Judy.
Wait a second, Heidi, have you heard from your daughter? Is she okay?
She's fine. She's at Forever 21.
You go, girl.
Exactly.
However, some of
Now, she could get lost in Forever 21.
She's fine.
Does she have a credit card with her?
No, she has.
That's good.
No,
she doesn't. Bitcoin?
Can she pick me up a lip gloss or something?
She has Apple Pay. No, I'm just kidding. She has some birthday money.
Oh, so she's loaded,
cash.
Ready to go.
Yeah. I don't feel like I should be saying these things
you
on the radio.
You shouldn't be at all. I don't know what you're doing.
Just don't describe her. She'll be fine.
Well, it's funny because some of Heidi's friends from school, some parents walked by with their kids. And I was like, I had to wave because and I said, yes, you notice they're with their children walking on Michigan Avenue.
You are way, way overboard there.
Me?
Yeah.
Why?
Thank you.
Because 12 is fine and she's on Michigan Avenue.
Okay, thank you.
She's 11.
She's 11. All right.
A whole different story.
She'll be 12 in October.
Even
she's
11.
Going into sixth grade. She can walk around alone.
I grew up in Chicago. I would be gone.
You.
All day
Judy,
long.
Judy, it's so different,
I know,
though. It's
it is
so different.
World.
When we grew up, we did. I mean, my parents
it's
had
safer.
No idea
but here's
where
the
I was.
Thing. Heidi,
it's
I didn't
now.
Hear. Did you or are you? Do you live in Chicago now?
Yes.
I felt safer in Chicago than when I moved to the suburbs. I never felt safe. I shouldn't say that. I always felt safer in the city. Now, it could be because I grew up here. But like Heidi was saying, I think in the suburbs, it was just more open. It was just more room for.
There's more people here you could ask for help.
Right.
From.
Or kids that see you. I mean, you can't really get abducted in a car on Michigan Avenue because you could pretty much chase the car. Right.
Do you think anybody would chase down a car on Michigan Avenue? I'd like to think that Chicagoans
it
would come together
get
and
very
cause
far,
trouble.
Very
absolutely.
Fast.
Yeah. And you're just more
an
savvy.
Hour to go 2 blocks.
If you're okay to shop in Chicago at 11, you're a savvy kid.
Well, she has a cell phone. She can call you or
contact you. She's got cash. God
she's
knows
fine.
What she's doing.
She's fine.
She's probably down at the Billy Goats.
You just think she's buying heroin?
Her and Cass are at the Billy Goat right now, throwing a couple back, having a cheeseburger. Yes.
Exactly.
She flew to Mexico without me with a girlfriend for spring break. And the girlfriend's
Wait,
mom.
What?
I was going to say, please say a mom was there somewhere.
There was a mom.
There's got to be a
travel
somewhere.
Warnings be damned.
Then
they went down. They're fine.
She's an independent kid. I'm not going to quash it. I'm going to go with it.
Awesome.
Wait, who checked her into the hotel? I have so many questions about this trip.
She was with a mom.
Oh,
the mom.
Okay.
A girlfriend and the girlfriend's
mom. Just not her
mom.
Right. Just not my mom.
Oh, that's fine.
Right.
Which is the best way for your kids to vacation, really.
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't have said no if I was invited, but I wasn't.
Were you a little hard? Do you need an extra? As long as there's three, a fourth would be good, right? All right.
You were going to ask about football.
I am, but let's. I'm sorry. Let's get back to that in 1 second. We have to find. I think Duffy Atkins over at CLTV is on the line. Hey, Duffy, are you there? Hello, Duffy Atkins. No, maybe she's not. Maybe she's She's covering the hurricane, and she was going to stop in and say hi and tell us what's going on down there. We'll try to get back to that in a little bit. So, yes, Heidi, you are coaching football, flag football.
I'm assistant coaching my son's flag football team. There are five girls on the team, so I'm proud to be a mom coach because you don't see those very often at football.
Yeah.
And we have a game tonight in Sheridan Park, and then we are going to scoot our tails over to Soldier Field for the Leo Catholic Lane Tech game.
Oh,
first
okay.
time since 74 that Leo Catholic has played in this Soldier Field kickoff classic.
What is your tie to Leo Catholic?
My tie is that I've written about them a bunch of times. Shaka Rawls took over the school last year as principal. The school, this awesome school on the South Side, 100% graduation rate, 90-year-old all-boys school. When he took over, he held a big volunteer cleanup day. People from all over the city came and literally cleaned, like washed windows, mopped, swept. Method and a bunch of companies donated supplies. Really cool day. Anyway, he's just been turning the school around in every way that you can. It had been kind of struggling and losing enrollment, and now it's really on the up and up. And here they are tonight playing their first football game in Soldier Field, which is so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the last time they did that was
probably
the
prep bowl or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Way back in 72?
74.
74.
Yeah.
Wow.
The year I was born. It is.
I know. I was born in 71, so I'm older than you. Well, that's cool. So you are only assisting tonight. You don't have to coach or take over. What are the rules of the assistant coach? What do you do?
Well, I don't know. This is the first game that I will assistant coach for. I coached practice on Monday. Last Friday, I thought I was going to have to take over coaching on my own. My husband and I, he knows a tiny bit more about football than I do, which is to say not much. And at the last minute, an actual former Chicago Bear stepped up and coached my son's team because one of my son's friends' dad is a former Bear. Michael, my husband, said, only in Chicago would your options be like us or a Bear.
Or a Bear. How nice to be rescued by a Bear.
They were
Can you help out? Well, I'm a former Chicago Bear. What year? What year?
Who is it?
Mark Green.
Okay.
Yeah, late 80s, early 90s, I guess.
Is that good enough, Kev? Is that good enough
to take
over the youth football team? That's pretty good,
absolutely,
huh?
Absolutely.
It was awesome. Yeah. And they won. My son's team won.
So are we keeping at this age, at Will's age, he's 8?
He just turned 8 on
just
Sunday.
Just turned 8. Mm-hmm. Are they keeping score? Because I remember when my kids played basketball for the Park District when they were 8.
We keep
every
score.
Time you scored a basket, the other team also got a basket on the
Pete's
board.
Sake.
Yes, so that's how you started out.
I like participation trophies. I'm not an anti-participation trophy person, although I did love the Confederate monuments being called participation trophies. That was one of my favorite things to happen on Twitter in the last month. But anyway, but no, you got to keep score and you have to earn your points. That's crazy. Like we've done I-9 flag football, which is, you know, just a different league. And they don't ever tell you the score. And it makes the kids nuts. And it kind of makes you kind of want to know.
Well,
like,
and
if you won
half
or
the
lost.
Parents knew anyways, right? You're all talking to each other. And
right.
We're up by two now, right?
You want to know if you won or lost.
Yeah.
That's part of sports.
It is. I would agree. I would totally agree. Hey, Duffy Atkins jumped on the phone for us. Hey, Duffy, how are you today?
Very good. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us what's the latest with Harvey.
Yeah, well, so I've been looking, and just so you know, the National Hurricane Center is going to be updating all this information this afternoon by 4 p.m. So just another 15 minutes, some of this could change. So I was looking around and seeing how we've already heard that sustained winds are up to 120 miles per hour. This storm continues to move very slow at about 10 miles per hour, but it's moving northwest. So it is going to be 75 miles southeast of Corpus Christi. So when you're talking about a hurricane, the size of this kind of hurricane, it's going to take about a 30-mile stretch of coastline. It's going to impact a huge amount of area. Plus, this is like the fiercest storm that U.S. has seen since Katrina in 2015, so over a decade. So we're looking at, like, in some areas, around 20 to 25 inches of rainfall. Higher amounts could be around 35 inches of rainfall. And this storm is going to make landfall probably late tonight into early tomorrow morning. And again, it's going to be, looks like, just southeast 75 miles of Corpus Christi. wanted to tell you that they are doing mandatory evacuations. Biggest storm that we've seen here recently, I would say in 2012, which isn't a named storm, was the East Coast and hit New Jersey and New York, and that was Superstorm Sandy. That was in 2012.
Yeah.
So it's been a while that we've seen a storm of this magnitude. And the worst part about hurricanes is even though those winds are going to be very strong, like we're already seeing at 120 miles per hour sustaining winds right now, the worst part of a hurricane is flooding. And that's what people don't understand, that this amount of rainfall in a very short period of time, because it's going to rain for several days, it's going to bring in storm surges over 12 feet. And that's what's the most life-threatening.
Yeah, no kidding. That's terrible. Now, I know that there's evacuations in Houston. I have a friend who left Houston for a few days now because of it, who regrets that he didn't get flood insurance now.
Yeah.
And this will start dissipating then over the next couple of days as it keeps moving inland. Will anything make its way up to Chicago later in the week? Will we get some ancillary rain because of it?
You know what? That's a really good question because hurricanes can affect our weather, whether it's in the Gulf of Mexico and you're seeing this hit the Texas coast, or even in Florida, or even if it was in New Orleans, that a storm could affect our weather. But the thing about this storm is it kind of sits and spins to the south for many days. So the southeast is just going to get hammered with lots of rain. And then it'll kind of, it looks like, scoot off to the east. So I think it's just going to stay farther to the south. Maybe we could get some remnants clouds, but I don't think that we're going to get rainfall from this storm. But that does happen. It is a possibility that storms that are thousands of miles away can affect Chicago's weather. But talk about, just to give you an idea how strong this Hurricane 3 is, it could flood 100 miles inland. So if you're looking at storm surges around 12 feet, you know, and towns are going to be underwater.
100 miles inland,
yeah.
That's like from Lake Michigan to Rockford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like Padre Island, I'm sure, Matt, you've been there partied when you were in high school or something.
Unfortunately, no. I was I didn't get to have fun like that, though.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm sorry.
My parents didn't let me roam up and down Michigan Avenue on my own.
Yeah, right. I think it's fine that she's going to clear.
Thank you.
Yes. But yeah, so this is the badness of this storm, is just this huge amount of rainfall. So I wanted to tell you something. These are populated areas. The hurricane warning affects 1.5 million people.
Wow.
But the tropical storm warning, that means just that's a little bit of a lesser degree from a storm.
Mm-hmm.
It affects 16 million people. That's a lot of folks.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of folks who are buying bread, buying water, trying to pack everything up, trying to make sure things don't flood. It's going to be interesting to keep an eye on all weekend long. Duffy Adkins from CLTV, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
You're welcome. Take care, guys. Have a great weekend. It's going to be beautiful in Chicago. We've got temperatures in the 70s tomorrow, but look for some afternoon rain showers on Sunday.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Duffy. All right, Hello, everybody. Matt Bubala in for Ro and Anna this afternoon on 720 WGN. Our friend Heidi Stevens from your Chicago Tribune with us for a few more minutes. You can follow Heidi on Twitter at HeidiStevens13, at HeidiStevens13. You write the balancing act in your Chicago Tribune. What have you been talking about lately that's been getting people excited?
This was a big week. Today I wrote about Evanston Township High School's new dress code, and that has people pretty fired up, mostly for good reasons. The students really didn't like the old dress code. They agitated to have it sort of evolve into the 21st century, and the administrators listened. So the kids now are allowed to wear tank tops with spaghetti straps. They're allowed to wear hats. They're allowed to wear leggings. A lot of schools ban leggings.
We've heard a lot about leggings. And during a commercial break, Heidi was trying to explain to me as we watched the menagerie walk by in Michigan Avenue what in the world leggings are. And that's basically what women wear.
You don't have to look long before you find six or seven pairs.
The funny thing is, Heidi, as we're looking on the streets, you say, oh, those are leggings. We're like, okay, I see that every day. I don't understand why that's an issue. It's also the same as the workout pants that I think a lot of women wear.
They're basically workout pants.
Yeah. But we see people walking by with jeans all the time that are just as tight as leggings, and
right.
Those are okay. Or white corduroys are different things that are very fashionable that are worn all the time, but because they're not leggings, they probably get away with that in these schools, right?
Right. Often they do. Yeah. The policies are pretty inconsistent. The problem more than the inconsistency is the message, I think, that it sends to girls, which is that your body is distracting to boys. Often the girls are sent home at, you know, at the schools that get in the headlines. The girls are sent home because they're told their leggings are distracting to the boys, which, you know, is not a whole bunch of steps away from you invited that
right.
rape by what you were wearing.
Right.
So you don't want to give girls the message that, you know, they're responsible for someone else's distraction simply by what they're wearing. And a lot of schools are becoming more sensitive to that.
And I would think the feeling is at a public school, it's the parents' response. If you want your child to dress modestly or want to dictate how your child dresses, that's a parent's issue to,
exactly.
to try to deal with.
Right.
Send them to a Catholic school if you want us to crack down on it.
Well, yeah.
You know
each,
what I mean?
Yeah. Each parent, each household gets to set its own value system for sure.
Yeah.
But if you're sending your kid to school in, you know, leggings and you're okay with it, then, you know.
I'm wearing leggings right now.
I don't understand how leggings became the flashpoint on this, because leggings are just, I don't know, it's just a pair of pants that it seems so standard. I mean, you go to Chipotle, you go anywhere. And most females in the pants, are that's just the style right now. Is they're
Plus,
generally
they're so
tight.
Comfortable.
I'm wearing leggings right now, too. Don't just pigeonhole women on this one, Matt.
It's true, Kevin. And you know what? You are distracting.
Probably
but
more than the girls.
It's not, isn't it how much you cover with the leggings? It's not really about the leggings, right? It's
So what, you should have a longer shirt
yes,
to cover the behind?
Yes. That's And younger that's girls don't. They wear the leggings like pants, but we... And Violetta, I think.
Yeah, I'm covered.
Yeah, you cover. You know, and they're just... So
I wear
that's
a short
fine.
Shirt.
A crop
Kevin,
butt.
Kevin never covers up, and it's really it's so distracting.
I apologize. It's comfortable, though. It's hip. It's cool. Everybody's wearing the leggings. I'm like, I got to get on this.
High-waisted leggings with a crop top does look really good.
Well, different bodies wear leggings differently, and this is one of the things that happened in Evanston was the student said, you know, the girls who are more developed are getting, you know, yanked into the office and told they're violating the dress code more often than the girls who are less developed. And, you know, different... different body types are being held to different standards, which isn't really fair.
Right.
And so that was one of the things they outright very explicitly address in this new dress code, which is that you can't discriminate based on gender, gender identity, gender expression, body type, body size, religion.
So,
you know, so headscarves are allowed. They spell out very explicitly that students are not to be shamed for what they're wearing. Based on culture, based on religion, based on body type, based on income, you know.
Sure. So if one person can wear it, everybody can wear it. They're not going to change it on bodies. But Judy says that she feels that when young girls wear the leggings, they should wear a longer shirt that covers it up. Do they have any language in this, or just leggings are okay? And
they don't. Yeah, they don't. And they took a lot of that kind of language out.
What surprises me about it, I guess, is cleavage is more the high school, you know, girls start developing and that's the thing that is eye level and everything else and becomes more of an issue. Do they have shirt restrictions and things like that, or they loosened up on that too?
They loosened up on that too. And they state that if, you know, if a bra strap is showing, that's okay. That's not a dress code violation anymore. What they're trying to do is... I guess take the onus off of, you know, the girls. Well, take the onus off of both boys and girls students, I think, in this situation for how much.
Well, the thing is, you have to wear a bra. You don't have to wear leggings, right? I mean,
you don't have to wear a bra.
Well, you don't have to, but it seems like more of a necessity. You can change your pants or change your bottoms, right? So they're saying don't choose, you don't have to choose the leggings. Choose regular pants or choose a skirt.
They're basically saying choose what you want to wear, get your education, you know, don't worry so much about what the people around you are wearing, focus on your schoolwork.
But they have a, they're saying focus on your schoolwork, not on what other people are wearing, but now anybody can wear whatever they want, so...
quite whatever they want. I mean, they're...
But they've way loosened up what people can wear.
Yeah.
So if they thought these things were distracting before, they're saying... It's going to be distracting now. You just got
to
deal with it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, to me, you know, you walk into, you know, you stand in line at Target to buy dryer sheets and, you know, the pictures on the front of magazines. If we're going to be pretending that, you know, you can't sit in school next to leggings, but you can shop and not be distracted by, you know,
That's the thing. I understand they, well, this is a place of learning and this is how it should be. I understand that. But it makes sense in my mind to let the school reflect the world. And if this is what, you know, if you're, oh, it's too distracting for the boys, or it's this or that, well, that's the world they live in. So they should learn to just, you know, live with how people dress.
Right.
It seems silly in a non, it's not a private school, it's a public school.
Right.
Where everybody's just there. I imagine you have to have some restrictions, but I guess they're going to take the challenge to let's open it up and see what happens and then reassess from there.
Yeah, the restrictions, so the restrictions that I saw are more like you can't advertise alcohol and, you know, drugs. You can't have hate speech on your shirt. You can't have, you know, language that discriminates against marginalized groups.
Yeah.
You can't have anything that looks pornographic. So there's definite restrictions,
sure.
But they're not so much you know, as subjective, I guess, as they used to be.
Well, it'll be interesting to see a year from now where they're at with all this
and if
that blows up at some point this year or becomes an issue. Heidi Stevens writes The Balancing Act in your Chicago Tribune. It's a good day to subscribe to a newspaper if you don't. You can also follow Heidi on Twitter at HeidiStevens13. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Matt Pabala with you here, 720 WGN. We're filling in for Ro Khan this afternoon. It's a beautiful day on Michigan Avenue. Lady Gaga is at Wrigley Field tonight, and everybody's out enjoying a beautiful day on Michigan Avenue. And Troy LaRavier is in studio. Hey, Troy, how are you?
Matt, it's so good to see you.
It's been a while, brother.
Maybe a year.
It has been a long time.
Yeah.
Usually you're with me in the overnights or late at night. Whenever I'm filling in, I like to bring you in. Troy LaRavier, if you don't know the name, next time you bump into Rahm, ask him about Troy. He'll probably tell you an earful about Troy LaRavier, former principal at Blaine Elementary, outspoken principal, did a lot with Blaine Elementary, and very vocal about criticizing the way we're funding the schools, the way we're closing down the schools, the way we're privatizing the schools, the contracts the schools are signing. You backed Chewy in the last election, which probably didn't win you any friends at City Hall. And now you're head of the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
So you're the president of that now. And I'd love to have you on to talk about school issues and things like that. And I know that you've got a lot to say about things going on right now. But you're in the news right now a little bit, Troy. And I've talked to you about this a number of times, about the possibility of you running for mayor. And there was a little story earlier in the week that there's some sort of survey going around asking people what they would think about a Troy LaRavier running for mayor.
Not quite. Let me tell the story of how that happened. When I first began to speak out about the bad education policies coming out of City Hall, as a principal, you know, that struck a chord with a lot of people. People seemed to admire the idea that someone who actually worked for the city and could lose his livelihood by speaking out, spoke out anyway. And people would come to me and ask me if I were interested in running for mayor, or they would contact me through social media. And so this has been going on for about 3 years, people contacting me like that or seeing me on the street and recognizing me and asking me about it. And the whole thing changed about a year ago when I was at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And believe it or not, Rahm actually got this started because he threw a party there. And all of the Illinois delegates were going to Rahm's party. It was a blues party. They had a band there and everything. So I went to the party, too. And at the end of the party, I'm walking out, and I run into someone I haven't seen in almost 30 years, someone I knew from college who's now a political consultant, Mikayla Blaze. I didn't know her well in college. She's just one of those folks you sort of pass. If you've ever seen the show A Different World, they used to have this place.
Sure.
Remember the pit where they hung out and ate?
Yeah.
Where University of Illinois in Champaign, we had a place like that called the Illini Orange. It was like our pit. And she was one of those people I would see in the orange. And, you know, didn't think much of it. She remembered me. I remembered her. And so we caught up. So what are you doing? I'm a consultant. What are you doing? I'm the president of the Principals Association. And I began to talk to her about some work I wanted to do with the Principals Association in organizing parents. And that's something she does. And so we began a relationship based on that idea. Meanwhile, she goes off and talks to people that she know who are in this political arena about me. And she begins to hear the word mayor a lot. And so she comes back to me with it, and she wants to talk to me. And so we set up a meeting, and we go on a walk in the Blaine area where I was once principal, because my favorite coffee shop is there, a coffee shop called Asado. which also, the owner tells me, is visited quite frequently by Rahm Emanuel. It's about the only thing we have in common. So we get to the coffee shop, and there's a gentleman there, regular-looking guy, and he walks over. It's a white guy. He walks over to him, and he says, you know, you're the principal. I say, yes, sir. He says, if you run for mayor, I'll knock on 1,000 doors for you.
She totally set that up. She had that guy waiting there, didn't she?
So I'm sitting. I mean, it happens quite a bit. It happens quite a bit, right? So I start talking to the guy, and it turns out he's a union member. He's really upset about this letter that came, this email that had come out with Ron bragging about taking pension benefits and medical benefits away from retirees. He's really upset, and he thinks that I can beat the mayor. And so we talk, and I walk away. And Mikayla's standing there, and she says, did you get his information? I said, no. She said, if you ever have anyone come up to you and tell you that they'll knock on 1,000 doors for you, don't let them leave without getting their contact information. So that's the background of this survey thing, right? And so I began to take people's information, even though I had made up my mind about whether I was going to run or explore running. And when people reached out to me on like a Facebook or a Twitter, I had set up this survey, mm-hmm. Basically a Google form that would allow them to put their information. I could just send them the link. And I never sent it out. I never publicized this. It was only if someone reached out to me saying you should run, I would then respond with a private message saying, here's a form. Thank you for your faith in me. Here's a form to fill out. If I decide to run, I'll have your information and I'll let you know. One of the people that I sent this form to posted it publicly on Facebook. And then Lauren Fitzpatrick from the Chicago Sun-Times got wind of this post. And then I guess she contacted Fran Spielman.
Okay.
And then that led to this article that Troy LaRavier is running for mayor or exploring for mayor. and so that's how that happened.
So where do we stand now? I mean, we're about a year and a half away from an election. So you have to decide or think about deciding that pretty soon, right? Because it's a formidable opponent. It's not like two rookies would be running for this. Rahm's got a machine. He's got money. He's got everything. If you do decide, when do they tell you you have to decide by and throw your hat in that ring?
So this is how I look at it. You know, we have a mayor who's been in office for 6 years, and he still doesn't have a plan after 6 years. And so if I want to think about running, I should at least think about having a plan. And so I want to spend the next few months. I think that the brilliance that it takes to solve our city's problems exists right here in this city amongst the people of Chicago. And so I want to reach out to the organizations and institutions that have been doing this work in these different areas that we need help in and convene, you know, bring the folk together who've been doing this, who have the great ideas, and even reach out to other folks who've solved these problems or made progress in these problems in other cities and begin to create a plan for what we need to do in each one of these areas and a vision, not just for solving problems, but for becoming something much better than we are, right? Chicago can be incredibly, monumentally better than what exists in this city right now. But you have to, there has to be a plan and there has to be a vision for it. And so we want to spend these next few months reaching across the city toward people who've been doing that work and beginning to create that plan. And when I feel like we have something that's worth presenting to the public that says this is something we believe we can accomplish, this is the message that we have to get buy-in and inspire people to invest in it, then you might hear from me.
Matt Bubala in for Ro Khan this afternoon and Anna DeVlantes here on 720 WGN. Happy start to your weekend, everybody. Sitting next to me here in the studio is Troy LaRavier, former principal of Blaine Elementary, now the president of the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association, and possibly sometime down the road, candidate for mayor of Chicago. You'll decide. You're thinking about it. You have to decide that down the road, and that's fine. One thing that you'll have to do, Troy, is have more than just education to run on. While that is a huge issue here in the city, there's also a million other issues, including terrible fiscal problems, violence and gun violence. How for somebody who has spent his whole life in education, how hard, as you're thinking about this, you know what you'd want to do with education, because I think you think about that every day. How hard is it to start thinking about, okay, how would I handle all of the other things that come with being mayor?
I'm so glad you put it that way. This is how I think of it. First of all, we have to remember that we have a mayor who's been in office for 6 years,
right,
who still hasn't solved those problems, who still is clueless and incompetent to deal with those problems. And one of the reasons I think that incompetence exists is because there's a failure to see the connection between those things. You know, as a principal and a teacher, I saw the connections. When I was an assistant principal at Johnson on the West Side, high poverty, mostly African-American school, the kids came in on day one of kindergarten extremely behind the kids who came in on day one of kindergarten at Blaine Elementary in Lakeview.
Mm-hmm.
A wealthy community, predominantly white. Now, it's day one of kindergarten, and they're already behind. How can Johnson be a failing school, and it's day one of kindergarten, and they're already behind? They are already behind because they have been failed long before they ever reached the school system, and much of what has contributed to that failure are all of the things that you just listed, whether it's lack of decent, stable housing, exposure to violence and trauma, lack of access to adequate nutrition, lack of decent jobs and employment for their parents that would pay an income that is adequate enough for those parents to then give those children access to things that stimulate their cognitive development, right? And so I have been thinking about these things and seeing their impact on our children for years. And so, again, I think that the brilliance, as I said in the beginning, that it takes to solve these problems exists in this city. I think a campaign that's serious has to tap into that brilliance, tap into that experience. But, you know, the administration right now doesn't want to tap into anything except our tax dollars and send them towards some private company. We have to tap into the brilliance that exists in this city. People have been working on these problems and have the solutions, and plus folks who in other cities and even other countries that have solved these problems. I think I'd mentioned during a break, if I was to start a political party, it would be the evidence-based party, right? What has been proven to work? I don't care about your conservative ideology. I don't care about your liberal ideology or your progressive ideology. What has been proven to work? What? And even if there's a promising idea where there's no proof behind it because it's a new idea, you know, you can try it on a small scale and test it out. And, of course, if you test it out, then you invest more in it. But for the most part, what has been proven to work? And that is the stage of, you know, we say when I'm exploring a candidacy or a campaign for mayor, that's what exploring looks like to me. For some people, exploring means putting their name out there and see how people respond, or having an event here or there, or testing this or that. For me, it means spending the next few months pulling those people together, pulling these experts together, pulling the grassroots folks together, pulling the university researchers together who know about these things beyond the city of Chicago and what's been done that's worked and has not worked, pulling them together and pulling together a plan and a vision for how to realize that plan.
Texter from 773 says, what are Troy's thoughts on the funding crisis for schools in the state and CPS and the new agreement, considering that Chicago started taking responsibility for teacher pensions back in 1996 when they were funded at a higher rate than they are now?
That's a pretty long one. What are my thoughts on the...
Well, what do you think about the way things are being funded right now? And sounds like the Texter's saying, hey, Chicago should be taking a little more of the burden because they took control of it back in 96.
So I don't know if I'm going to answer. Hopefully I'll answer the question indirectly or directly in an indirect manner. And so the way I see it, Chicago often blames the state and the state often blames Chicago. And, of course, they're both to blame. That... several years ago when Paul Vallis, and I'm not a big fan of Paul Vallis, particularly his education policy, but he seemed to know how to handle the budget of this district. When Paul Vallis was the CEO, we had a $1 billion surplus. We had a fully funded teacher pension system. And the state funding formula was the exact same funding formula it is now.
So what happened?
Right. That's the point. What changed? Because the state funding formula has always been inadequate. I'm not defending it, but that inadequacy is very different than crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You have inadequacy and you have crisis. What changed to take us from inadequacy to crisis? And much of what changed in CPS. CPS began to build school after school after new school after new school. That's Rahm's philosophy. Just build a new school. Spend hundreds of millions of dollars building new schools and don't invest in teacher preparation and professional development, curricular enhancement. Just keep building new schools. And so that spending spree, and then all of the privatization that went along with it, and the corruption, like the Supes contract with Barbara Bird Bennett, for which she is now in prison or heading to prison. It was the change in how this district operated that had as much or even more to do with this crisis than anything the state has done. All of the state acts needs to come through. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to put the state off the hook, but inaction in Springfield is no excuse for inaction in Chicago. You know, they go, well, if we act and we raise local revenue, that will just put the state off the hook. These are people's futures you're talking about. If you were divorced from your wife and your wife refused to contribute to your kids' college education, would you not fund your kids' college education, find a way to do it by yourself despite her? Or would you use their college education as some sort of bargaining chip? Well, if you're not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. Right? These are kids' futures here. If the state's not doing it, the city needs to step up and then continue to push the state. It's not like we give up on the state, but we can do something while continuing to push the state. But they instead have this argument, if we're just going to sit back and not do anything because doing something would then let the state off the hook. You let the state off the hook when you stop putting pressure on the state. And just because you're raising revenues doesn't mean you don't continue to put pressure on the state to do the same thing.
So the city's not doing enough, but they can't let off the state. They have to keep up both fronts. But the city's got to change what they're doing, clearly, is what you're saying, because it wasn't perfect under Vallis, but at least we had the money to do things. We just maybe chose the wrong things to do.
Right. There's extremely waste. It's a combination of extremely wasteful spending and lack of adequate revenue.
312-981-7200. Troy LaRavier is in studio with us. When we come back after the news, here's what we're going to ask you. Rahm comes to you because he's smart and he's a politician and he watches House of Cards and he thinks, keep my enemies closer. He's going to come to you and say, Troy, you come run Chicago Public Schools. That's what we'll do. We'll do this together. Think about that during the news. You'll tell us afterwards. Okay. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Hello, baby. Troy LaRavier is in studio. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Lady Gaga's in town. Did you know that? Are you meeting with her at all this weekend?
I did not know that. I actually missed her when I was at the... They gave me a free ticket to her when I was at the Democratic
National
Convention.
Are you serious? And you didn't go?
And I did not go.
Why? What were you doing? You can't
say. No, I can't
say. Let me just tell you right now, Mr. LaRavier, that if you plan on running for mayor, those are the types of questions you're going to have to answer.
I am not your average candidate.
You better be... Well, you better be ready, buddy, because... Rahm's got
I'll
a lot of money.
It just like that, too.
Well, they're going to find out. That's the problem.
I don't care.
No, but are you ready for that? If you decide to run for mayor, are you ready for all that comes with that? If you watch candidates that we've seen go get rung through the ringer and everything else, are you ready for somebody to look through every email you've ever sent, everything you've ever said in public?
Yeah.
Every relationship you've ever had?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my relationships are... The business, the only people who can hold me accountable for my relationships are the people I had the relationships with, right? That's one of the things about politics I can't stand, you know, how we spend so much time caring about things that have nothing to do with public policy.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not going to let myself get caught up in that kind of nonsense.
Well, we would tell you, Troy, we're measuring the character of yourself. And then, while it might not have anything to do with policy, we know how you react in certain situations. The situations you put yourself, that's our salacious
justification. I don't care what excuse you have for it. You know, I'm not getting into that nonsense.
But you're going to have to survive it. Yeah. You have to survive that.
Yeah, my wife and I have talked about that too. So, I mean, and that conversation is between me and my wife. And that's how it's always going to be.
Well, that's good. You better stick with that. By the way, I told you this off air. You're sporting, you've always had the goatee, and you're sporting just a little bit of gray in there, a little bit of gray on top of the head, too. And I'm thinking, see, he's really working it now. And now he's trying to look a little more Barack second year, third year, maybe. Is that what you're going for? Third year Barack?
I wish. I mean, if that's the impact, then great. But
sure.
The gray's always been here, man. I'm always on your show at nighttime. This is the first time I've been in here with sunlight, and so the gray's really showing now. So you notice it, but it's always been there.
I think you're trying to look a little more mayoral.
Hey, if that's the impact, all right, I'll take credit for it.
All right, let's get back to a little bit of I was saying as we went into the news that have you ever watched House of Cards, the Kevin Spacey show?
I watched the first two episodes. I haven't seen any.
It's really diabolical.
I'm a Game of Thrones nut.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to get into that. The first two episodes I saw were pretty good. Yeah. I just did not get to the third.
It's really insane. It's sort of like Game of Thrones without dragons.
I hear he's president now.
Last I saw he was. And it just got there in the worst means possible. I mean,
really?
It's like... I almost am going to say that, like, he makes Trump look like a candy bar, like really sweet and nice. I mean, it's a fun show.
Wow. I like how he stops and talks to the camera.
Yeah.
I love those, man.
Kevin Spacey's amazing. He's really good. All right. So, but I'm sure Rahm has heard of House of Cards, and he knows, boy, he was in the White House. He knows everything, right? So he's hearing you cause all these problems and stirring people up. And so he's saying, all right, I got to keep my enemies closer. And he's going to come to you and say, Troy, I've got a great idea because you seem to know what's going wrong here. Why don't you come run the Chicago Public Schools and I'll let you do it the right way and you figure out what we're doing wrong. And then, you know, together, Troy, we can do this. Because he's going to say, Troy, I'm going to make sure you don't win mayor, but here you could come work with me. It'd be like Darth Vader come and have that conversation with Luke, wouldn't it, Steve?
We can rule the universe together.
Rule the galaxy together.
That's hilarious, man. What are you saying? What would I say?
What if he, I mean, because legitimately,
something like
if you
that
felt
actually
you could
happened.
Go there and do something good.
Something? Absolutely not. Not on it. You need an administration that's willing to invest, not divest. And that's all this administration has done. Do you know Chicago Public Schools is ranked 849th out of 854 school districts in the ratio of students to certified staff? What that means is certified staff is a principal, a teacher, an assistant principal, a nurse, anyone who requires a certificate from the Illinois State Board of Education to be in a school, down to a teacher assistant. And so when you invest in a school, what's your biggest expense? Staff.
Right.
Right. That's the investment. Like when you believe in something, you invest in it. And so you show your belief in our students by how much you invest in them. And the biggest indicator of investment is the staff. We are ranked 849th. We have one of the highest ratios of students to certified staff. The state ratio is 10.3. The Chicago ratio is 15.6:1. Now, what does that look like in an average school? Because it was just a bunch of numbers devoid of... In an average Illinois school with 600 students, there are 58 certified staff to serve those students. That's the average school, not the best, not the top quartile, not the top 20%. Average is 58 professional educators for 600 kids. You know how many educators 600 kids in Chicago get? 38.
Wow.
58 to 38. That is divestment. Not investment. You know, people talk this belief stuff, oh, we believe in our kids. If you believe, you invest. You don't invest if you don't. No one will invest in something they don't believe in. And that's student to staff, that student to certified staff ratio more than anything else tells us about their lack of belief and lack of investment in our students. And so the first thing I'll say is, okay, Mayor, we need to at least get up to average. So we need to up that 20 staff people per school. Well, that's a hell of an investment.
Yeah, it is.
And so that'll be the end of that conversation.
Yeah. Is that also a change since Arne Duncan left, since Emanuel's administration took over?
I haven't looked at it that far back, but this is a good question.
Yeah. I think the average Chicago resident whose taxes go into funding the public schools will say we're paying a lot of taxes. We're paying taxes everywhere. Mm-hmm. Property, income, soda taxes. There's a million different taxes. The state should have and the city should have enough money to do this stuff.
Very good question. Very good point, because although we're 849th in staffing, I doubt very seriously if we're 849th in spending per student. But that spending isn't happening on the students. It's going to the Sodexo Magic Corporation. It's going to Forrest Claypool's consultant attorneys. It's going to the Aramark Corporation. It's going toward building new school after new school in a district that's not getting new student after new student. It's going on things that enrich the people that have donated to this mayor's campaign and not toward the staffing that these students need. That's what education is. It's a staffing enterprise. It's a service enterprise. When the thing they get from the adult professional educators that they have fewer and fewer of in CPS. And they invest in everything but those things that'll make them a profit.
Texter says, what happened to the lottery proceeds? The whole Illinois lottery
Everybody
system was set up.
That question.
So where's all that money going?
I couldn't tell you. You know, maybe that's one we need to explore in my mayoral exploration. What happened to the lottery? This is what I've been told. And I don't like to talk about what I've been told. I like to. So don't take this as gospel. It's just one of the answers that I've heard. Is that the money is going there, but it's a bait and switch. It's not even a bait and switch. It's a substitute. And so as they spend more of that money on education, then they take money that used to go toward education and spend it elsewhere. Now, I don't know if that's actually what happened, but that's the most sensible thing I've heard.
I've heard that, too, is that basically if we used to spend $100 million on education every year and suddenly $60 million was coming in from the lottery – the state then only spent $40 million on education and subsidized it with that instead.
That is the most reasonable thing I've heard, but I have not validated that or verified it.
Somebody else asked about the teacher salaries versus the rest of the state or the rest of the country.
That's a wonderful question. So CPS and like these ridiculous hyper right-wing institutes like the Illinois Policy Institute like to say stuff like Chicago public school teachers get paid as much as any other teachers in large urban districts. That's their dog whistle, large urban districts. Now, if you're an economist and you want us to set, if you look at economic principles and you want to set a salary, you set the salary based on similar institutions with whom you are competing with for talent. Mm-hmm. You want to set a salary that will attract people to your institution and not toward theirs and away from theirs. That's what you want to do. But you have to look at the folks you're competing with. Chicago doesn't compete with New York for teachers. Right. We compete with Niles and mm-hmm. Wilmette and Glen Ellen and Oak Park and Evanston. And so they never compare Chicago teacher salaries with the districts with whom Chicago competes for teacher talent. Teachers don't leave CPS to go to New York. They leave CPS to go to Oak Park. They leave CPS to go to Evanston. And so what are they making there? And if there are at least, we did this analysis with principals, there are 52 school districts within a 15 to 45 minute driving range mm-hmm. of Chicago that pay principals more, and I would imagine it's the same for teachers, than Chicago Public Schools does. And so we do not have a salary that is competitive with the districts with whom we compete. Now, I don't want to hear about New York or Atlanta. I'm not losing teachers to New York or Atlanta. I'm losing them right here in Cook County. Does that answer your question, brother?
I think it answers my question.
Or the caller's question?
I think it does. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Troy LaRavier's in studio. We'll get back to Troy in just a minute. I want to say hi to somebody because there's somebody very special in town I think you guys have all heard about. And our traffic reports from Violetta have probably touched on this. Lady Gaga in town tonight at Wrigley Field. Joining us on the phone right now is Maya Anista Smith. She is the president of Lady Gaga's Born This Way Foundation. Hey, Maya, how are you?
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm talking to you right now from backstage at Wrigley.
Are you really? That must be, I know you've got a very important job and you're doing a lot of great stuff, but that must be really cool.
It's epic. It's an incredible job doing amazing work, and so grateful to have the opportunity to talk about our work with you today.
Tell us a little bit about the Born This Way Foundation. What are you guys all about?
Sure. So the foundation was founded 5 years ago by Lady Gaga and her mom, Cynthia. Our mission is to build a kinder and braver world, and we do that in three ways. We work on kindness, we work on destigmatizing mental health, and we work on building positive environments.
And you guys did a big thing here in Chicago yesterday. What were you guys doing?
We did. We partnered with Staples. They've been an incredible partner. And as you may have heard, Staples funded all of the Donors Choose projects for amazing teachers throughout Chicago. And yesterday we convened a group of people to reveal some results on our kind about the connection between kindness and mental wellness. You can check more out at BornThisWay.foundation. But we didn't want to just talk about kindness, and Staples was kind enough to donate some back-to-school supplies. So we packed backpacks for the Knight Ministry, an incredible organization here in Chicago. So we talked, did some good, and hopefully helped some young people in Chicago.
Why is that the goal of the Born This Way Foundation? Why are you guys working so hard on mental health and things like that? What's the tie-in for Lady Gaga and her mom?
Yeah, so as she talks about publicly, Lady Gaga didn't always have it easy when she was growing up. She experienced meanness and cruelty and was very clear from a very young age that she would use her time and treasure and talent to make sure that young people had the resources, support, community, and networks to not only survive, but to thrive. And so that's what the foundation's committed to, and it's what Gaga's committed to as well.
And how important is it for you to have a company like Staples? Because, I mean, Lady Gaga has millions of fans worldwide who are happy to donate to her causes, I'm sure. But I imagine it also helps to have somebody with some pockets to bring in the money to really get things done, too.
Absolutely. We're so grateful for our partnership with Staples. And really, I mean, building a kinder and braver world is an issue that no matter how big of a star you are, you can't do it alone. And so we need businesses, we need nonprofits, we need leaders and communities to join us and to lead as they already are. And so we're grateful for the support of Staples and look forward to working with anyone else who wants to join us on this mission.
What is the website again, Maya?
It's BornThisWay.foundation. So check us out, connect with us on social media.
BornThisWay.foundation. BornThisWay.foundation. Yes, and the concert tonight at Wrigley Field, anything very, I mean, what have you seen so far backstage? Is there anything crazy that we should expect tonight?
It's so cool. If you're going to the show, for the listeners that will be at the show, the foundation has an activation in the concourse. We'd love for you to come say hi. I'll be there. Our team will be there, and we'd love to meet your listeners. So please come check us out at the foundation activation.
Sounds good, Maya. We'll stop by and say hi tonight. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night. Have a great concert. That is BornThisWay.foundation. Violetta, how bad is the traffic looking heading to Wrigley right now?
Yeah, CTA is always a great option. And the inbound Kennedy is really heavy now. It's spiked. It's an hour 15 from O'Hare to downtown.
Woof. All right. We'll check that again in a couple minutes. A couple more minutes here with Troy Laravier. Not candidate for mayor, but thoughts are in his head. Is that the proper way?
Maybe that's on a t-shirt. It's like a bubble above my head.
Maybe mayor? Question mark? Question mark? Question mark?
Right.
The biggest, Troy, we could talk for hours about violence and economic challenges, everything else that you'd have to address. The biggest, I would think, hurdle at first is money, because Rahm's got money coming out his wazoo, and I imagine you don't. So how, if you decide, all right, let's do this, let's figure this out. Bernie showed that you can run a grassroots campaign and have the money to do it, but the machine tried to kind of shut him down too. How would you tackle all that?
And so I mentioned earlier about the fact that I'm an evidence-based person and that I believe that the plan and the vision that this city needs is out there right now, waiting to be come together. It's out there. And this community organization and that one there, that they've been dealing with issues, that have the ideas, this university professor, this scholar, this conservative thinker, this liberal thinker. These people have not been convened and brought together. I think a progressive vision that's unapologetically centered on people over profits. You know, that's one of the things that lit Bernie's campaign up. He was unapologetically for people, and he didn't succumb to the pressure to say, you know, no, this talking point won't win me votes, right? Mm-hmm. He went against the rules and was unapologetically for working people, and his message caught fire. And I think we need to create a plan for working people and all people in this city, and a message for getting that plan and that vision of this city across that people can connect to and get inspired and motivated by. That's the challenge. And I think everything else will come with that. Once he did that, everything else, the money came, the volunteers came, but there had to be a message that people could connect with, a plan that people could connect with. You know, for example, you have to inspire people. Schools, we just finished talking about that. Let's go back to them real quick. We were talking about CPS. Did you know, have you ever heard of this particular phenomenon, this idea, that Chicago public schools do better than any other school district in the state with groups of children from particular socioeconomic levels? Chicago, for example, Chicago public school children who are poor, mm-hmm, do better than poor kids in any other school district in the state. Chicago public school kids who are from working class families perform better than kids from working class families in any other school district in the state. Chicago public school kids who are from middle class families do better than middle class kids in any other school district in the state, and Chicago public kids from wealthy families do better than kids from wealthy families in any other school district in the state. The reason we end up looking like we're low performing is because we have so many poor kids, so many more poor kids than those school districts and we already talked about the fact that they show up to school on day one of kindergarten already behind. Right. And so Chicago public schools inherits a failure of our city and our state. But once we get those kids, they learn more with us than they learn in any other school district in Illinois. Have you heard that before?
I haven't. You keep saying that, people are going to think there's no problems here.
Now, if you keep saying that, people are going to begin to believe that perhaps our public school system is worth investing in. Because there's certainly some problems here.
Troy Laravier. If you want to follow him on Twitter, maybe you'll get a survey that you can fill out. And so he'll know if you want to go knock on some doors about 3 months from now. Troy, thank you so much for coming in as always. It's always a pleasure to have you. Keep fighting the good fight. And
thanks,
we
Matt.
Look forward to hearing more from you down the road.
Appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
News is next, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, in for Ro and Anna on 720 WGN. What that means is there's more alcohol available to everybody else on staff during the Carnarvon Wagon segment. Kevin, am I saying that right?
Carnarvon, no, you're not.
Carnarvon.
I said Carnarvon, didn't
no.
I?
No.
What did I say?
Carnarvon.
Carnarvon. Why can't we just say the drinking segment? Why do they have to make it complicated?
Because that's the fun part when you're drinking and it's complicated.
There's a long, long story behind it. Ro's told it a few times on
okay.
the air.
Well, let's not do that.
We'll
right
wait
now,
for then. The for Ro to get back when we tell
Absolutely.
The story again.
That would be good. Okay.
Kevin, the bottom line is booze are present. That's a good thing.
Booze are
booze?
Present?
Booze are present.
Just say that clearly.
Not booze is present?
Booze is present.
Well, I don't think it would be booze are present.
Okay.
I was confused on the booze.
Booze? B-O-O-Z-E?
It sounded like you said something else.
Those segment's off to a great start, Matt.
Yeah,
let's keep it flowing.
Matt Bubala, again, in for Ro and Anna here this week. The Florentine is with us in studio. Alex, the sommelier. Fidelma, the manager of the Florentine, are with us. Hello, ladies.
Hi. Hello.
Thank you very much for being with us. And I'm drinking right now what's called the Escape to Adventure. What is in this?
That is our beer-forward cocktail. It has a Stiegl Radler with fresh grapefruit juice and a Caravella limoncello topped off.
Stiegl Radler, is that the grapefruity beer?
Yes.
That's really good. And so what did you combine it with here?
Caravella limoncello and a splash of grapefruit juice just to kind of brighten it up a little bit more.
Is that something that you guys just made up at the Florentine, or is that a drink I might find elsewhere as well?
We created that cocktail.
Do you guys do a lot of that? Are you creating cocktails all the time just to have something different so people come in and say, oh, I had this great drink there, and send people back there for it, I imagine?
Absolutely. We change our menu seasonally. So both our meals as well as our cocktails are made changing with the seasons.
So if, like, in February I come in and I really want an escape to adventure, will you still make one for me as long as I know what it is?
Depending on if really? We have the ingredients on hand, it's definitely not true. Going to be on sense. The menu then.
Yeah. Okay. What else are you guys serving right now this time of year? Especially, are we still summer then? We haven't changed yet to fall, right?
Even though it's starting to feel like fall yeah. outside, we have yet to change over. We're still in the bright, fresh, refreshing cocktails, and our goal is certainly to have them be a little bit more sessionable, as when it's so nice and beautiful outside, we kind of want to start drinking a little bit earlier too. So
yeah.
Having those lower alcohol cocktails help with that.
Aaron, could you bring these beers over to our sportsman, Kevin, because that's the type of guy he is. Kevin, will you try out these beers for us?
I would love to try out these
Thank
beers
you.
For
You're you. So giving.
Yes. Someone's got to do it.
What are these just examples of beers you have in draft? Are these beers you're crafting yourselves, or where do these come from?
So we have 12 rotating draft lines. We try and mix it up pretty often. So and we offer a city flight and a suburban flight. So three breweries from the city. It's 3 6-ounce pours. Of local beers, and then we do a suburban one. This particular one is featuring Two Brothers.
Two Brothers.
Really good. And so it's their coconut blonde ale. The middle one is Hop Centric, which is their double IPA, and then we're finishing it off with a Kolsch. So just nice and
I don't know.
Summery.
Wait, I don't know which one's which. I'm just going to drink them all. Which one is this one?
This is the double IPA. This
double.
Is Hop
oh,
Centric.
Okay. All right, that's what I'm talking about.
So this is the city. A flight. You also have a suburban flight?
Yes.
And what's in the suburban flight?
And then it just depends at the moment. It's Temperance, which is from Evanston. We have Miskatonic, which is from Darien. And mm-hmm. then Two Brothers, which is featured on this, which is in Warrenville, Illinois. This is yeah, just kind of a mixture. You can also build your own flight. Any of our 12 drafts. We'll do 3 pours.
Yeah. This is great. This is great. I got a big smile on my face.
The Florentine is on the second floor of the JW Marriott at 151 West Adams. They've been there since 2011. The-Florentine.net. Do you guys do brunch on Sundays? What are the specialties of the Florentine?
Absolutely. So we do brunch from 11 a.m. till 2, Saturday and Sunday. But some of our highlights would be our business lunches mm-hmm. as well as the happy hour. So from 4 to 6, Monday through Friday, we serve a free pizza with the first round of alcoholic beverages in our bar.
Oh, that's a pretty good deal.
When did brunching become such a thing? I mean, brunch didn't just get invented, but like every restaurant now in the city has some sort of brunch special. Like, when did brunch become the hot time to dine during the day, I guess?
I think it's an excuse to drink.
Yeah, it's starting earlier. Yeah, get some mimosas, some refreshing beer going.
I would imagine also, now you mentioned having it on Saturday. It was really a Sunday thing for a long time, and I bet it started out as a way to just drive up some business on Sundays, right? Because it was probably a slow time for a lot of restaurants.
Absolutely. Sundays definitely lower business levels than Saturday. So yeah. To have them have an excuse to come back, especially if they came in on Saturday night, we're in a hotel, so if they're drinking Saturday night, a little hair of the dog on Sunday morning is always a good thing.
That's what I'm talking about.
Fidelma, you're from Dublin, you said,
I
right?
am.
So when did you come to the States?
You could say this is in my blood. I was actually born a couple of blocks away from the Guinness Brewery, so definitely
really?
Yeah, right in the Liberties in Dublin. I've lived in Chicago for 15 years,
for
so
15.
Always worked in the beverage industry, and yeah.
I imagine that opened some doors. Did you walk in a restaurant and say, well, I grew up next to the Guinness factory?
I that could be a selling point,
yeah,
I suppose.
Totally. What do you think? Do you miss home? Is American Chicago truly your home now, or do you miss going back, or do you go back often?
I mean, I go back fairly often.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my home now.
Yeah. You're Chicagoan through and through.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's about a million different breweries in America, but I still believe that Guinness may be the best beer on planet Earth. Do you feel the same way? I mean, there's nothing quite like it. The texture of it, the flavor. Guinness, to me, just has a totally different feel to it than every other beer I've drinking.
I agree, because it's relatively low ABV, which people yeah. wouldn't think because it looks kind of dark and heavy. So I think it's really, really sessionable. You can have several of them and keep on drinking all day if you wanted
See,
to.
See, that's crazy.
I think it's so food friendly.
I had a Guinness once in my life. I had half of it. I almost fell off a bar stool.
Not even, but the alcohol is not even that high compared to some of these beers.
That's it's about crazy. The same as the Miller Lite. It's four something.
Is it really?
I think
low ABV. You mentioned that, and that's a specialty at the Florentine. What does that mean, and why are people looking for that?
It means that there is less alcohol per drink, so you're able to have more than you would if it was a stronger beverage. It is something that we specialize specifically in at brunch, mm-hmm. but for dinner and also for happy hour, all of our lower ABV cocktails can be enhanced with stronger spirits. So that way everyone who does need a real serious drink after a long day can certainly.
But I imagine if you're starting early in the day and you're going to be out with friends all day long and you're going to have cocktails throughout the day, it's nicer to have something a little lighter. You're going to enjoy the flavor a little bit more and be able to, you know, enjoy the entire day instead of having a couple of drinks and suddenly, you know, that impairing your day or you're not being able to make it all the way tonight.
I love the whole idea of this. Let's make cocktails a little less potent so people can just drink all day long. I love it. Finally, somebody's doing a good deed for us drinkers out there. Because I think people can get sloppy if they start early.
Yeah, you know? On a Saturday, especially with football season coming around and things like that, and people still want to go out at night. And
that's
then right. By 3 in the afternoon, you're kind of done. Maybe not you, Cap. But
ease into it. Ease into it.
Fidelma, let me ask you one more question about Guinness then. So you grew up next to the Guinness Brewery. You've had Guinness here in the States.
Yes.
Is a Guinness truly a Guinness here in the States, or is it only a Guinness if you're there in Ireland?
I do think it tastes different in Dublin. I don't know if it's the water or it's the freshness, but definitely, I don't know. It always drinks a little bit smoother and better in Dublin for some reason. I guess Guinness claimed that all the Guinness sold in the Chicago market is brewed in St. James's Gate in Dublin, but I don't know if
you're not buying
logistically
that.
That's possible. But yeah, if you've never tried Guinness and oysters in Dublin, you need to put it on your bucket list. It's amazing.
Right. And oysters?
And oysters. It's a wonderful pairing.
Who would have known? Like with cocktail sauce or mignonette?
Usually just with a little squeeze of lemon juice and some oysters, or in some Guinness and oysters. Perfect.
About.
It's a wonderful pairing.
Now you got a trip you got to take, Alex. Alex is a sommelier. Fidelma is the manager at the Florentine. It's at 151 West Adams on the second floor of the JW Marriott. If you stop by in the next few weeks, order the Escape to Adventure. It's delicious. Or the Flight of Chicago or Suburban Beers. Thank you so much for jumping in, ladies. We
appreciate
it.
Thank you for having us.
Real pleasure. Daylight's still a
long time coming, but I know. Thank you again to our friends from the Florentine, 151 West Adams. That's the second floor of the JW Marriott. Brunch on Saturdays and Sundays. Kevin is enjoying the drinks quite a bit.
They brought us 6 pizzas, Matt.
you're going to have to leave us more drinks if you're going to leave us 6 pizzas, everybody.
I assured them that free food will not go to waste at a radio station.
It absolutely will not. No. Joining us right now from, I believe, from up north in Evanston, it's Adam Hoag, our Bears expert. Hey, Adam, how are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. Good.
What's going on?
Getting ready for Mitchapalooza on Sunday.
Round two. Adam, I know you guys had tweeted about it and saw some stuff on social media. Did John Fox sort of allude to the fact that Trubisky could get in before halftime? Earlier in the week, we heard Glennon start, Trubisky second half. But is Trubisky going to get some reps before halftime?
Well, I think the thing that's important to remember is that, well, especially in the regular season, these guys spend a whole week game planning, and within about 10 minutes, everything goes completely out the window and everything's on the fly. Now, that's a little different because it's the preseason, and you do like to structure things in a certain way, and you can, because ultimately they say they want to win the game, but that's not really the most important thing. And so I think they have a plan, but I think that plan can be adjusted and will be based on a number of factors. I mean, if Glennon looks good and moves the ball and they end up being out there for a good number of plays and things are working, well, then they might want to get Trubisky in there early just because of the amount of plays that Glennon has got to. I mean, it's really more about plays than it is one quarter or two quarters. On the flip side, the question I've been asking is, what if Glennon's terrible again and, you know, just has a terrible first quarter? Well, now you're talking about you really do need to see Trubisky against the Titans starters, and that's kind of out of the Bears' control. So that's a scenario where I could also see Trubisky getting it in the second quarter to make sure they get those reps. And Fox kind of left it open-ended today and said that that's a possibility.
Adam, do you think that's sort of why they got out in front of it and said, we're going to get him some time with the number ones this week just to get him experience, just so if that did happen, if they did get him in earlier, they could just say, hey, we always planned all along to get him in there and try to downplay any problems for Glennon?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've recognized the hype around Trubisky. And the thing, too, is, I mean, practices are open this week. And if you're going to put them out there with the starters in the game, we're all going to see that in practice. And even though technically we're not supposed to report things like that from practice, I mean, it's gonna be out there. So I think that's why they came so strongly out earlier in the week and made it clear that Trubisky was going to get some time with the starters. Now, what's interesting is while Fox has kind of left it more open-ended, other than he did say that it was going to be the start of the second half, it was Glennon who said that it was just going to be one series. Fox never really said that. Hmm. And to me, one series, and again, you know, one series could be a three and out, or it could be a 14-play drive. And so that's where I'm not buying that it might just be one series, because if it's a three and out, it's not really Trubisky's fault. Like, it could be a left tackle gets blown up on the first play, and it's a loss of three on a handoff to the running back, and then they're behind the chains. Well, that's not really Trubisky's fault, and that doesn't really give him the reps he needs. So I can see it going beyond one series, and I'm not completely convinced that it's definitely going to be coming out of the gate at halftime, because they do want to see him go up against the Titans starters.
How much does, you know, we hear a lot about it's a tough year for John Fox. They feel like they've got to win to keep going as a coaching staff. On the other hand, the front office clearly wants to take their time with Trubisky. Do you foresee a scenario where Fox is pushing to get him in because he thinks that's their best chance to win, and the front office is saying, hey, I want to go slower with him?
I mean, I definitely understand that side of it. I do think that's probably sort of the way Fox has to be thinking here. I think all head coaches are thinking that. I mean, they want to win every game, and they're going to play the guy that gives them the best chance to win. Now, where the front office stands on this, I mean, it's Ryan Pace who traded up to number two to draft Mitch Trubisky. He's really the one that put his job on the line. So if Trubisky's ready and looks like the best quarterback, I would think he would want him out there too. Now, the only thing that kind of goes against that is that I think the signing of Glennon was certainly to buy time if Trubisky wasn't ready. But it was also, I think, him trying to create a Sam Bradford-like situation, like what happened in Philadelphia last year, where if the rookie surprised everyone, and last year was Carson Wentz who did this and was ready to start the season, well, then they would have trade bait. And unfortunately, Glennon has not really shown anything that would make another team want to be like, hey, you know, come and get him, whether it's now or, and I don't think it was really supposed to be now, but more so at the end of the year. So by not playing Glennon, you're kind of hurting his value. And I don't think that's probably not enough to not play Trubisky if he's ready, but it is something to keep in mind here going forward.
Adam, short on time, but what are you doing in Northwestern tonight up in Evanston?
Yeah, cool event they have up here. It's Meet the Team Night for the Cats. They'll name their four captains for this season here shortly around 6 o'clock. And then especially if you have kids, it's a completely free event. They get to meet all the players, throw footballs around with the players, and it's really cool. So kind of an unofficial start to the football season. We're only a week away from the Cats opener against Nevada, and I'm looking forward to it. It's football season again.
Holger on the sideline for all those games. 2:30 start next week, Adam, at Ryan Field here on WGN, correct?
That's right. And don't be
– go Cats.
You know, in the NFL world, they're kind of sleeping on Clayton Thorson. I think that they –
they're contending for the West this year, Adam. They'll be right there with Wisconsin in my estimation. I don't know how you feel about that, but they'll be right there.
I agree. Those are the two teams to beat in the West. I agree.
Adam Hoge, thanks so much for jumping on the phone. Have fun out there tonight. Go Cats.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you, Adam.
And Kev, you and Sam, are you guys doing the high school show?
Yeah, Preps Plus tonight. We'll have Glenn Bard West's head coach on at about 10:20. We'll give you all the scores from all the big games around the state, around Chicagoland.
Were there any
cover? 10 o'clock tonight, myself and Sam.
Any big tilts first game of
the
year?
Well, tomorrow, really Glenn Bard West and Maine South, which are probably 1A and 1B, two best teams in all of Illinois, and they're facing
and
off week
facing
one.
Off
It'll be tomorrow
one.
At Glenn Bard, a 1:30 kickoff, I want to say. So the head coach, Glenn Bard West, will join us tonight. That's a great way to that's the equivalent of Alabama, Florida State to kick off the college football season, which is next week. That's a 1:3. It's kind of what tomorrow is for high school football here in Illinois.
Preps Plus at 10 o'clock tonight. It's... It's Matt Bubala in for Ro and Anna this afternoon on 720 WGN. Sportsman Kevin Powell sitting next to me. Violetta's up in traffic. Camille's producing. Judy Pilak is nowhere to be found. It's 5:46 is when she usually does.
She had a good run.
She might be eating pizza.
She might be. Joining us on the phone right now is the sports book director for the South Point Casino out in Vegas, Chris Andrews. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Are you nervous about this fight, or are you excited to make a bunch of money on this fight?
Well, you know, I get that question a lot about it, a lot of things. I have a certain level of nerve. I can't tell if I'm nervous or not nervous. I have this constant attitude, I guess, you know, because we book all kind of sports all the time, and I guess you just kind of get used to it. But I wouldn't say I'm not nervous. I mean, I'm always worried about everything. So, yeah, I'm somewhere in there. But, well, you know, I'll be okay.
Give us the basics on this. The Floyd Mayweather is a huge favorite to win. So yeah. if I came in and bet $100 on Floyd to win, what would the payout be to me if Floyd won?
Not that much. You're going to bet $100, you can win about $15.
So the odds are way in his favor. If I throw $100 on Connor and Connor wins, what am I going to walk away with?
A different story. Then you're going to win $525. So that's why most of the tickets written on this fight have been on McGregor. Now, not most of the money, the big bets. We've had some awful big bets around town, and we had our share. Our biggest bet we had was $880,000 on Mayweather. And we had a couple others well into the six figures. And, you know, that's the way it goes. Serious gamblers are mostly on Mayweather. And, you know, the guys, I mean, there's been a couple of serious bets on McGregor, but the majority of the big bets were definitely on Mayweather.
$880,000. Did that person actually walk up to a window with cash in hand?
We had some money wired into the cage, and then we kind of go from there.
Wow. Well, Chris, we've heard that this is going to break records in terms of how much money is actually being bet on the match. Can you confirm that? And do you have any idea of what the exact number is going to be, at least in the state of Nevada, how much money is going to be thrown down on this fight?
Well, I don't have any exact numbers. We won't know until probably like Monday morning, I'd say. But the previous record was $50 million statewide, but I think I'm pretty sure we'll shatter that. I think we'll be pretty close to $100 million. I don't know if we'll quite get there, but I think we're pretty close. I can tell you at the South Point, we're gonna have more action on this fight than we did on the Super Bowl itself. Now, that doesn't include, you know, all the props and, you know, the future book and that sort of thing. You know, but on the game itself, this fight will have more action than the game.
Is there an outcome that you're really looking for as an employee of the South Point? Do you need Mayweather to win? Is it going to be a really bad Monday morning if McGregor pulls off a stunner?
No, that's, you know, that really has been floating around here. I've heard that a couple days ago. This will be the worst day in the history of Las Vegas if McGregor wins. You know, if you had just stopped the betting 4 or 5 days ago, that might have been the case. But since then, we've had a lot of big action on Mayweather. Now, us personally, and I'm sitting here with the owner of the South Point, Michael Gaughan, sitting right next to me. But he knows we're not afraid to take a stand here. We take some pretty big bets. And we definitely want to go in and need Mayweather in this fight. And, you know, we're trying to do that. And a lot of money has come in really both ways. But, yeah, we want to need Mayweather in this fight. We think that that's the right side. We really thought the price should be much, much higher. But, you know, sometimes you can't make them bet. You can move the price and hope they bet and offer what you want, but you can't make them bet. But right now, I'm very comfortable with our position. We need Mayweather, and I'm happy with that.
Other than Floyd straight up or Connor straight up, is there a value bet out there that you may offer as a tip to some of our listeners, something that may make sense?
Right now, I really, you know, I had some guys come in and you know, guys that I respect. And I think right now, like Mayweather by knockout. So rather than laying like 6 to 1 mm-hmm. on Mayweather, you could lay -180, so 9 to 5, that Mayweather will knock him out. I think that's a better value because I really think that's probably what's going to happen. I'm not sure Mayweather can, you know, land a one big punch and he'll get counted out. I don't see it that way. But I do see him just kind of getting that jab in there. And, you know, you flick that jab a couple hundred times, which is probably what Mayweather's looking to do. You know, and McGregor's been cut up a couple of times from his UFC fights, and sometimes those things don't heal all the way. So I think Mayweather inflicts a lot of punishment, and I think you're looking at a guy with maybe a lot of blood on the face and that sort of thing. And it's not UFC. It is boxing. I heard the one young lady asking you about the kicking. No, it's strictly boxing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the referees, if they see a lot of blood, they will stop the fight. And I think that's what's going to happen. That's one man's humble opinion.
Are there a bunch of prop bets, sort of like the Super Bowl? Or are there different things we can do? Can we bet on whether McGregor loses it and gets disqualified because he tackles Mayweather at some point?
Actually, you can bet that. We just have a vague disqualification. Now, I heard you say that McGregor would be under, face a big fine if he did do that. And that is true. I don't know all the particulars of the contract for either one of these guys, but that is the word that we got, that McGregor would lose a substantial part of the purse if he were to do that. So I think that he will not do something like that. So I have no minus $7, but you can take 5-1 if you think he will be disqualified. So we've had a lot of action on that prop. We have other props like which round the fight will end in. And
what
and
about what color they're wearing?
We didn't do that.
Determined well ahead of time.
Okay.
Chris, what's the two guys that will be walking with money are Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. Do you have the number on how much each of them will be making? I guess regardless of the outcome, what's Floyd and Conor going to walk away with?
Well, you know, again, I think a lot of it is determined by the actual revenues of the fight. And, so I don't have those numbers. But the number that I've heard, now you got to remember, they really, when you say, like, the purse, and I heard McGregor's getting, like, $200 million, it's not like he puts that all in his pocket. He has to pay, you know, the UFC's going to get a piece, and his trainer gets a piece, and, you know, of course, Uncle Sam gets their piece. You know, so that money, it probably cut that in about half or so. You know, and then Floyd's going to make probably a lot more, probably about $300-some. But these are – I don't know exactly, to be honest with you. I'm more involved in what's going on in our sports book, mm-hmm. and, I got enough to worry about with that.
What is the over-under on the rounds? It's a 12-round fight. Is there a bet on it ending before the 12th round? Is there a place where that stands as a good bet?
Yeah, I have – you can just bet a flat bet with me. It's 7.5 rounds, and other guys have some different numbers up. Or you could choose the exact round and get a rather large payout for doing that, you know, by 10-1 or 6-1, depending on whatever round you choose. But, we have all those. We have those props, and they're doing some action. It's not like the Super Bowl.
Sure.
You know, nothing like that. Most of the guys coming in are just want to bet either on McGregor or Mayweather. And, right now, and it took a while for us to grow the Super Bowl props, too. So just throwing them up for a fight like this, we never expected to have, you know, an avalanche of bets like we do for the Super Bowl.
Hey, Chris, we're tight on time, but is there another match that you can remember that had the sort of anticipation and intrigue that this one does?
You know, not for a long time. I mean, this was a golden age. There was a golden age of boxing here in Las Vegas. I'm talking back when Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran and Hearns and Hagler and Larry Holmes and those kind of guys fought. But it's like a single event like this. I don't think we've probably ever had that. I was talking to one of the guys here, Jimmy Vaccaro, who's worked with me here at the South Point. And he thought maybe like the Holmes-Cooney fight. Which was, wow. God, it's got to be 35 years
ago.
It's a
long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, about 35 years, I think. And there was a big, you know, kind of like a racial thing that was going on. And he thought that might have piqued the interest that, you know, was close to this one. But he still thinks this one was probably the biggest, you know, single event, you know, of its kind in Las Vegas history. And it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah, and there is a little bit of a racial tinge to this one, too. I mean, I think the guys have helped play that up because they wanted to, because I think they thought that that's going to help, make this as exciting as possible. SouthPointCasino.com. Chris Andrews is the sports director at the South Point Casino out in Vegas. We'll visit you next time we're out there. Good luck this weekend, buddy.
Yeah, please come and see me. Say hello, and thank you very much. And you guys have a great weekend, too.
Thanks, you too. We'll talk to you soon. Matt Bubala in for Ro and Anna here on 720 WGN. Judy, if missiles are headed our way, will you give us the 14-minute heads up, or how will that work?
No, I'll be gone if that happens. If I hear that, I'll shoot right out of here.
Okay, so you have 14 minutes. Where are you going in 14 minutes, by the way?
To a bomb shelter.
You have one all picked out,
ready to
go? I
know where one is.
Do you seriously?
No.
The Tribune basement.
Yes, first place I'd run. This building would crumble in a heartbeat. No.
Oh, you think so? No way. This
just
is back when they built buildings.
Maybe Lower Wacker.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I
think I'd go to my car maybe and just cry.
They always have you go to basements, things like that. I have
the Billy Goat. That's a perfect spot.
The Billy Goat would be a good place
to
die.
It's a nice bunker.
It is a bunker.
They always talk about, you know, get down into a basement, this or that. I always have a great fear of if those buildings, you know, I don't like being on the bottom of a dog pile when you're wrestling with your kids and stuff like that. I don't like that idea.
Right.
I think I'd rather be outside if we're going to take this on.
I don't know that we know the proper etiquette for a bomb. Do we?
Oh, I think it's on. Go to cityofchicago.org. There is an explanation of what to do.
Oh, all right. I haven't gotten that scared yet.
Well, maybe soon. Matt Bubala here with you. Joining us in studio right now is Daniel Hinkle. He is a reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Wrote a story today that was at the top of ChicagoTribune.com for most of the day, Daniel, about the taser situation here with the Chicago Police Department. Ever since the Laquan McDonald case became public and we saw the video of the police officer shooting him 16 times when it clearly was not necessary, there has been a lot of talk about tasers and body cameras and what we should do. And the goal of the Emanuel administration now is to outfit every Chicago police officer with a taser, correct?
It's every police officer who's on routine patrol.
Who's on routine patrol.
Right.
So anybody who's walking a beat or driving around, maybe finding themselves in situations more often than not where there's a possible arrest or something like that, right?
The night Laquan McDonald was shot, of course, the police on the scene had been asking for a taser and none came. And so after that, there was Alderman had been talking about expanding the taser program, and then that's when this started.
So they're working on getting everybody a taser that they deem would need one, and they haven't reached that goal yet, right? They're still working on it, still getting them?
No, they had, as of November 2015, when the video came out, they had 745. Now they're at 2,400, and they say they're going up to 6,900 by the end of the year.
Okay. But you guys did a big story today on how the tasers are used and the reports on whether or not sometimes those are used excessively or how they're used correctly or incorrectly. And what does it look like? I mean, are they – it sounds like a few officers use the taser a lot and then it's just kind of meandering as far as the rest. But the concern I would guess is – how well are these officers being trained on when to use and not? We had a lot of talk about when we should shoot, when we shouldn't shoot. The idea is, well, let's give them tasers instead so we're not killing people. But some people have died because of being brought down by a taser. So where's the police department at on all that?
Well, I guess our goal was to look into the history of the taser program, which started, you know, more than a decade ago. They started buying these things. And we basically filed an open records request for records of the taser program going back a decade and looked at who were their most frequent users and all that. And what we found were, you know, one of the things we found was that there was a subset of police officers who were using them regularly. And everybody, you know, it's important to point out that is, you know, experts say, hey, that's a red flag, but it doesn't necessarily mean misconduct. But there were certain officers who used the taser pretty regularly, like some of them, you know, close to once a month for some period of time, a couple of them. And some of those guys had other things in their records. They had, some of them had shootings. Some of them had, one of them had a domestic abuse allegation. Another of them had, you know, 83 citizen complaints against him, which is an extremely, you know, unusual number in the department. So.
And what does the police department do when somebody complains about an officer like that? Are they as strictly looking at taser usage as they say would in a shooting incident?
What do you mean by that?
So, like, when an officer uses a gun an arrest or whatever, I imagine there's a whole procedure that's gone through on was that proper usage, things like that. When a taser is used, Is something followed through afterwards on whether that was used properly or not?
Right, okay. That was one thing that's in the story, is that the, you know, shootings tend to trigger pretty, you know, relatively heavy investigations. Mm-hmm. The Independent Police Review Authority is automatically involved. With tasers, the short answer is that they did not always get extensive outside oversight, and they were left to mostly the police department to look at. And supervisors tended to look at these use of force reports that the officers had to turn in. And they, you know, for example, I looked at 100 of these for 5 of the heaviest users, the force reports that they file. And generally, within a very short period of time, they would be, the supervisors would mark them, and in every one of about 100 instances, they said it was justified.
And I know that it's not your place to judge that, but people that you've talked to outside that look at what other cities do, are they alarmed by that? I mean, I imagine that in some ways I could see where people would say, well, we're not using guns, we're using tasers, which would be like when we had to use any other force. We tackled them, we had to chase them down. This is a way to prevent other injuries, or, you know, prevents a car chase, prevents all sorts of other things. So I'd imagine some people would say that's why we're going to use them. We're not, you know, it's much safer than shooting a gun, and we can apprehend this criminal instead of chasing them or getting in a car or possibly putting other people in danger.
I think an important thing to note is that, you know, being tasered is very painful when it connects. And also the Justice Department, when it issued its report in Chicago in January, did specifically say that the use of a taser against someone whose only offense is fleeing after a minor crime is, as they said, quote, unconstitutional on its face, that it's a violation of your constitutional rights to have that happen. I believe it's the Fourth Circuit, one of the Eastern federal appeals circuits, issued an opinion also to that effect, that generally it has to rise to a certain level before you would bring the taser out.
So in general, and this is not necessarily the case here in Chicago, although you say in the story the rules have been revised, but in other cities, if you are arresting a criminal, it's a minor offense, they stole a bottle of liquor or something minor like that, there don't appear to be a danger, and they flee, other cities do not allow you. They explicitly ban the use of a taser in that instance, correct?
New Orleans, which it started earlier in us, but New Orleans has been under DOJ, you know, led reforms for years. And one of the results of that was a new policy on taser use that said, yes, mere flight is not enough to justify a taser use. There have to be other circumstances. They have to be threatening. It has to be impossible to subdue them with some lighter force. And I don't remember what the third one is, but generally the person has to be threatening.
Do they issue guidelines of what a police department should do then in that instance? So if somebody is being arrested, it's a minor crime, but it's still a crime where you would arrest them. So if it's worth arresting them, theoretically, it's worth arresting them. They somehow wiggle out of the grip and they're fleeing. Do they advise chase them as much as you can? Because there is a danger we talk about once in a while here, and car chases, and that gets worrisome. So at what point do they say what you should do, or is the advice sometimes, well, it's not worth pursuing them for, let them go, we'll theoretically get them another time?
I've certainly heard it said, yeah, that there are, you know, there are some risks not worth taking. I think, obviously, there are a lot of perspectives on that.
Yeah.
It's a matter of opinion, I guess. At what point does it become worth, you know, risking someone's life to arrest them?
All right, so that's, I guess, the question then. Is this risking someone's life to arrest them using a taser? That circuit court said it's unconstitutional, and there is a young man, Dominique Franklin Jr., died by being subdued by a taser. Now, it's interesting because he was being arrested. The police were trying to subdue him. He got away, so they tased him, and in his process of getting away and being tased, that paralyzes you, I believe, to an extent, he fell and hit his head on a pole, mm-hmm. right? And he ended up dying from those injuries.
That's right.
And so that's a real... I'm sure to his family it's not, and maybe to the police it's not, but seems like a real gray area on what should you do. We're in the process of arresting this person. They're fleeing, which I imagine also for the police leads them to think, why are they fleeing this minor arrest? Maybe it's because they've been arrested before and it's trouble, or they feel it's wrongly, or they're afraid of the cops. Or I imagine in the policeman's mind, it might mean there's something else going on here and this is worth pursuing. So How does CPD respond to this so far? Because that seems like, hey, this is what the taser is there for. When we can't subdue a person and we don't want to shoot them, this is our option to use this.
I think it's an open question what CBD is going to do in the future. Their new forest policies take effect in September, or they take effect sometime in the fall. They've set them in stone as to what they're going to be, and they are significantly more detailed and kind of, I guess, restrictive than they were in the past. And they say that a use of force has to be reasonable, necessary, and proportional, right? Mm. So that you have to consider the totality of the circumstances when doing this. And it does suggest that officers are supposed to make a calculation as they're doing this as to, you know, what is the risk of the person, what is the threat, you know, what is the necessity of doing this.
You know, you wanted to take those assessments out of their hands by giving them an option outside of the gun. You know what I mean? Because these gun deaths, and it's a judgment call always, and so you want them to make better judgments. You don't want people to die in apprehension, so give them this other option, and now they're kind of going to go through the same thing on having to figure out and train them on how to make the right judgment call on when to use the taser or not use the taser. I imagine it's going to be highly controversial. The story's at chicagotribune.com. Daniel Hinkle, reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks so much for coming down tonight. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Traffic is next, 720 WGN. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantes. But they took the day off, so did just about everybody else they work with, except for Judy and Violetta and Kevin.
I know. Where is everyone?
Do they all take a day off together? So Brian.
No, it's unusual.
And Jeff and Anna and Roe.
They each think they're the only one that took off?
That's a good question.
Or they're all together somewhere without us.
You think that's what happened?
No.
No, they would not leave us behind. Why would they leave us behind? That's a bad idea.
Do they want to not have a good time? Go ahead. Go for it, people.
Maybe they wanted peaceful,
they wanted a relaxing time?
Quiet?
Well, they're going to hear about it when they come back.
Yeah. Well, that's why they don't tell you.
If you think they're not all listening right now, you're crazy, because they all are.
I guarantee you they're not.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing that's better than listening to this?
Three sheets somewhere is my guess. For all of them.
That's how we sound better.
Yeah, we're kind of like that now. What are you talking about?
That's true. Well, did they bring the drinks upstairs? Because they disappeared down here. Are all the drinks upstairs?
I don't know, Matt. Are they?
I might have had one or two.
Nice, Judy. This is why they go on vacation
is one of the best drinks I've ever had.
I never got to talk to you guys after Mexico.
Don't bring that up. Now I miss it.
Violetta, what was my favorite drink in Mexico?
I think the iceberg.
No, the White Russian.
Iceberg, though. That was delicious.
All right.
Kevin remembered it because Kevin kept getting us drinks.
It's been five months since the trip.
We'll get back to your fun. All right, Mexico is gone. You know what's here now? North Korea is here now. That's what's here
now. Oh, my God.
Oh, what a bubble burster you are.
I know, I know. Get out of my way. Gordon Chang from ABC News is here. Hey, Gordon, how are you doing tonight?
Fine, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for jumping on last second like this. We appreciate it. Here we thought we're heading into the weekend, and we kind of got a lot of, you know, we've gotten new scandals and new worries here in the States, and North Korea seemed to be in the rearview mirror a little bit, but now we hear reports that they did test a ballistic missile tonight. What do we know about that?
We know that they fired three missiles. They traveled about 155 miles downrange into the Sea of Japan, or the East Sea, and it appears that the first and third missiles failed. And the second one actually blew up on the launch pad. And that's an indication, I think, that the North Koreans, fired these off for a political purpose, which is to coincide with the Ulchi Freedom Guardian joint military exercises between South Korea and the United States. The North Koreans really hate these exercises. They always do something provocative during them. And this is this year's installment of North Korea's belligerence.
So they're weren't necessarily trying to prove anything with this, because the most recent missile launches had proved that they possibly could get something to North America and how far they could get it. So these seem to be a little more, you're saying, just to say, hey, we're unhappy with what you guys are doing, so we're going to do something. But now you're saying that two of them failed and one blew up on the launch pad. So does this prove what they wanted to prove just by, hey, we're out here too? Or does this make them look like, you know, is this a setback for them after they just had a successful launch of missiles that proved that they could maybe get something to America?
Yeah, this is not what they did last month with the two intercontinental ballistic missile launches, their first. Those missiles could reach the United States if they were fired on a flatter trajectory. They fired these things way up into the atmosphere and they came back down. But that is, no one does that. What they would do is fire them in a different path, and that path would take them to at least Chicago, maybe even Boston. So That's something very different, and that was a real intent to, you know, show us that they had the capability. But what they were just doing a few moments ago really was, I think, just a political act meant to disturb peace in North Asia.
All right, so the next question is, how does our president respond? What's your guess? I mean, we're doing these exercises, so maybe we could say, well, we're doing this, so that's just their tit for tat. But that generally doesn't seem to be how we are here these days. We tend to answer back. What's the concern on what's going to happen now out of Washington?
Yeah, I don't think that there's really going to be very much in the way of a reaction. I mean, we could see a tweet from President Trump, but apart from that, there's not going to be any coordinated response on the part of the U.S. government or even South Korea. You know, we're just involved in these exercises. We're going to continue doing them. We're not going to let the North Koreans or the Chinese stop us. And, you know, essentially it's business as usual, as the phrase is. But, you know, I don't think that this is something that is going to get hearts racing in the American capital.
Do you feel like we're in a better place right now with North Korea when they decided they're not, you know, the plans are there, but we're not going to attack Guam right now? Do you think that we have, or is there maybe some back channel stuff that's making things better that we don't really know about? Or are you as concerned as maybe you were a month ago when the rhetoric was really high?
Yeah, I'm still as concerned and even more so. At least when the rhetoric is high, it means that the United States is paying attention to what the North Koreans are doing. When you have these lulls, the real risk for us is that we stop working, you know, on solving this problem. Because the North Koreans, I can guarantee you, are continuing to make fast progress on both their missiles and their nukes. And so this is something where we need to have constant pressure on them, because we don't have very much margin for error, because within a year, 9 months, 15 months, something along that time frame, the North Koreans will be able to integrate all of their capabilities and land a nuke in the United States. Now, I don't think they're going to want to do that, but nonetheless, they're going to do something along those lines in order, I mean, in terms of catching our attention.
Yeah.
They're probably going to you know, try to threaten us with their nukes. This could get really ugly fast.
Well, my guess, Gordon, is that once they want to be able to prove that they could do it, so that everybody has to come back to the bargaining table, so that sanctions can't be what we do to them anymore, because they do have a legitimate threat. Is North Korea winning this battle? Because as long as they keep developing everything, they're finally going to get to a place where they have to be dealt with, right?
Right. The thing that I'm concerned about is that when Kim Jong-un, the North Korean ruler, is confident in his arsenal, he will use it to blackmail the United States to break the treaty with South Korea, to get our troops off the peninsula, so then he can then achieve the long-term goal of the Kim regime, and that is to rule all of the Korean peninsula. This is where things actually get very dangerous, because then the North Koreans can miscalculate. That's the real risk of North Korea getting a big arsenal. It's not that Kim Jong-un decides he's going to nuke Austin, Texas, which they once threatened to do. They're not going to wake up in the morning and fire at us. But what they will do are these things that can cause miscalculation and therefore end up in a descent towards war.
So you worry they overplay their hand a little bit, somebody steps back and says, no, we're not going to do that, and then suddenly there is a face-off and something happens.
Right. I mean, the Kim regime has a history of using violence to upset status quos that they find to be unacceptable. Now that they can upset status quos with nukes on missiles, this gets to be such a more dangerous game than it was in the past.
Boy. Well, it'll be a fun weekend watching this. Gordon Chang from ABC News, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Have a great night. All right, folks. Well, that's that'll get your weekend off to a good start. Now, back to happier thoughts. Girls, Jackie and Shanae texted that their favorite drink in Mexico was that blended coconut drink.
A pina colada.
Or the Miami Vice.
Jeez, God help us.
It was unlimited, so really, you didn't have to pick just one.
I tried every single one. But the Miami Vice is twice. The pina colada and the...
And the iceberg. And no, the white Russian. The white Russian.
No, it was the pina colada and the red one. The
I don't know.
My favorite was the cold beer. That was my favorite drink.
That was good, too.
It was good because it was so hot on the beach. You needed kind of just a beer to refresh yourself.
Not everyone was there. Thank you. Sponsored
you
by
brought
the...
it up.
You asked about it, Matt.
I just read a text from Shanae and Jackie.
Oh, they're listening? Hi, guys.
Oh, we
let's go
them.
Back to Mexico.
Happy Bubala with you here, 720 WGN.
You have Gaga on the brain.
Why do I have the newsroom in my headphones? What the hell is going on down here?
Are they saying anything good?
Ooh, Judy looks animated in there. I can see her behind the glass.
Judy is talking in my ear.
It's probably in Q or something.
What is in Q?
Who knows?
Judy is bragging about how she wrote the news tonight. It's all in my ear right now. I don't know what's going on. It's freaking me out.
Your intercoms are probably jammed.
Yeah, they could
be. Listeners.
Should I just punch on something? Lady Gaga coming up at Wrigley Field in about 8 minutes.
It starts at 7? You're going to be late.
Yeah, well, the doors open at 5:30.
Oh.
I'm guessing somebody goes on at 7. I'm hoping Lady Gaga won't go on until it's at least dark, right?
The Gaga?
Yeah.
Hey, nah, Rob. Wait.
Hey, Rob Martier, I think the intercom is jammed up there. Can you hit that button where you normally talk to me?
What's that? Intercom?
Yeah, the intercom
is
jammed.
Hang on, my headphones just fell apart. Hang on.
Beat up.
How much did you drop for these tickets?
Stand
cannot
by one.
Tell you that.
Here we go. Hang on.
Cannot reveal it.
How come that's such a secret?
Punch that intercom because it's stuck. There. Are you talking?
I was.
All right, perfect. Thank you, sir. That was. I heard Judy
good
talk
radio.
About how
this is great radio.
How
this
great
is
she wrote.
Radio.
Well, they're all shouting in my
mark
ear.
It down.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Sorry about that, everybody. I'm not going to reveal the amount of the tickets, Kev, because
was
it's
it more than
stupid?
You're a big Gaga fan, huh? I didn't realize there were any massive Gaga fans out there besides like.
It was my wife's birthday present.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, come on, Paul.
I didn't know that it was his wife's birthday. I'm sorry.
Anything for the wifey.
Happy birthday, Matt's wife.
Yeah, it was a couple months ago, but I got the tickets on. And the price was insane, and it was through, like, I went to Cubs.com and bought them. It wasn't through StubHub or some secondary seller. It was an insane price just buying the tickets.
Love hurts.
Thank you, Violetta. What do you guys got going on this weekend? Kev, you got the show tonight at 10. What do you got going on Saturday, Sunday? Anything fun?
I have day filled with golf tomorrow, which is just
nice.
About a perfect Saturday for me. I got some brother in town. I got a baptism to go to Sunday, and that's pretty much a wrap for the weekend. And, of course, tomorrow night we'll be watching the fight.
Yeah, the fight. Are you going to go to a bar? Are you going to go to somebody's house?
You know what? Honestly, I have a few different options because a couple different buddies are getting the fights at their places. So a group of us might go here or there, or I could just go to a bar. So I'm gonna kind of feel out the day and see what I'm in the mood for when the time comes, because the fight's not going to happen until about 11 o'clock. There's some undercards.
Is it going to be that late? I got a bunch of like teenagers at my house for this thing.
Oh,
it's not going to be till 11?
The main event's around 10:30, 11 from what I've heard. But there's undercards starting real early. And
yeah.
I think actually the undercards, if I'm not mistaken, aren't pay-per-view. Like the main event's pay-per-view, but you can watch some undercards, but I think Fox Sports is carrying them, so you can watch some fights, I think, even starting as early as 6. So there's going to be a big, big build-up to the main event, which, as we talked to our guy in Vegas, that he can't remember a fight that has this sort of anticipation to it. I mean, there's a lot of intrigue.
What's funny is the anticipation is so much people going, this fight's going to be awful, this is a travesty. It's like a car crash
but
that people want to watch.
Yeah, but for me, the intrigue is we don't know that. None of us know that. None of us have any clue what's going to happen tomorrow night.
I really, neither of these, I would say this, there are not two good people to root for here. There's not one good person to root for. They're both not the best people from their actions and the way they talk. So it's hard to find somebody to root for in this. But that said, McGregor is such an underdog that you'd love to see that's how I'm looking at this. I'd love to see him stun everyone and put up a good fight. And my prediction, if I'm going to give one on this, is we get about 3 or 4 rounds. Now, people who claim to know everything about this say that, or I've heard some say that Mayweather could take him out right away, that maybe Mayweather will let this go along for a while to make it a good fight. My guess is that McGregor shows him a little more than he expected early on, but 4th, 5th round, McGregor sees he's got no chance to actually win this, so he goes crazy, not falls into the wrestling stuff, but just goes for the knockout and either lands one and gets it or tires himself out so bad that he won't last another round.
See, I don't think that's – the thing with – you know, people are like, well, maybe McGregor will land one and sneak up on me. Nobody's been able to do that to Mayweather. So a guy who hasn't had a boxing career, I just don't see him somehow knocking out Floyd Mayweather when no one's been able to do that.
But let me say this. Every other fighter maybe in recent years has fought maybe Mayweather's fight. They know how Mayweather fights. It's going to get dragged out. It's going to go 10 or 11 rounds.
Dances around.
You got to dance with him. You got to do all this stuff. Has a fighter just gone after him And has he had a 3 or 4 round fight? Because some guy just tried his best to knock him out. I don't know if he's faced that, you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. I can't recall 49 of his matches, but I think it's good. I mean, again, that goes to the original point. Like, maybe McGregor does come out and just start swinging away.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think both of them, they're both showmen, and they're both phenomenal at selling this fight. They have been over the past few months. You're going to see that with the amount of pay-per-view buys. It's going to be record numbers in every department. So, you know, I think both of them realize that they want to give a show. And as you said with, you know, Mayweather, he's not going to knock out McGregor under 4 rounds. He'll stretch it out and give the people a show.
That's what I think, too. I think that Mayweather, even if he's having a time and knows he has control of the whole thing, he'll make this go 7-8 rounds. He'll want to because, A, he wants to put on a good show. B, while he claims this is it and he's retiring again for the third time, if there was another $120 million in his future, it would be tough to say no to that. And if you had a really good match that really drew it out and people loved it all around, you know, there was no clamoring really for a second Mayweather-Pacquiao fight because it just wasn't a great fight.
No.
But if they could put on a really good fight here and the demand was there, you got to imagine they'd love a second payday.
And speaking of that Floyd Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, this just came across on the AP earlier. I thought, found it kind of amusing. A federal judge has dismissed class action lawsuits by disgruntled boxing fans who complained that they didn't get their pay-per-view money's worth when Pacquiao fought Mayweather in Vegas of May 2015. So there were some angry people who dished out $100 like you're about to for a sounds like a teenage get-together at the Babala household tomorrow night.
Yes,
is that correct?
It is. Yes,
so,
it is.
So if it's a boring fight, are you going to file some sort of a lawsuit with the promoters of this fight, that it was too boring and you didn't get your money's worth?
A fight is the ultimate buyer beware, isn't it? I mean, you might get a really sucky fight. So, I mean, there were times that Tyson knock somebody out in like 34 seconds one time when we had all gathered around one of those?
Yeah, I think you do that a few times.
Sometimes that's just what you're buying into and you have to be aware of it. And, you know, if it was fixed or there was some false whatever with it, then that's something different. But, yeah, if you're going to buy it, you're saying goodbye to $110 and just be happy with whatever you get.
So how much money did you pay for those Lady Gaga tickets?
News is next, 720 WGN. It's time for the news. It's time for Justin Kaufman with the download. What's coming up on the show, young gentleman?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, bud. How are you?
Good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's been a long time.
I know, right? Well, tonight, Theodore Witcher is going to join me. He is the writer and director of the movie Love Jones, that is now celebrating the 20th anniversary.
Wow.
It was a Chicago movie that came out in the late 90s that was about sort of a poetry scene here, and starred Nia Long and Lawrence Tate.
20 years ago.
Can you believe that?
Oh my God.
And so they're having a big thing at the Siskel Center next week, so he's coming in for a screening, but he's going to join us tonight to talk about 20 years of Love Jones. And we'll reload this week's news, biggest stories. Seems like all the news just kind of happened in the last hour.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you're still here for all 4 hours, right. If North Korea doesn't get you first, that sounds like a great show.
Exactly. I'm out next week, but I know you're in for one of the shows, right?
Yes, I am.
That's right.
Wednesday night,
awesome,
I'll be back.
Man.
Yes, sir, I am. We'll have a good vacation. Stay out of trouble.
Hey,
okay?
Thank you, buddy.